Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 8th, 2018. Boy, time is flying, huh? We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. And our access code is 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email us a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website and give what you can. You know, we're completely supported by the widow's mite, I think you might say, your $5 donation. So, look, if anybody can afford more, that'd be great. But everyone should be able to afford at least $5. We appreciate it. And it keeps us going. We've got a lot of work to do. Okay, let's go into the scriptures. Tonight's scriptures are going to be picking back up in the Gospel of John, chapter 6. I think, I'm not sure exactly where we ended, but I'm going to pick up on verse 52 and read to the end of the chapter, which is 71. So I'll pick up at 52, where the Jews therefore strove among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" So let me go back one verse so we kind of recap it, where the Lord said, "I am the living bread which cometh down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world." Okay, and I believe that's where we ended last week. So the Jews therefore strove among them, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" And then Jesus said unto them, "Truly, truly, I say unto you, except ye eat of the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you." And of course, that identifies with his sacrifice and his life as an example, and the work that he did in his life. "Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. This is that bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead, he that eateth of the bread, this bread, shall live forever. These things said he in the synagogues as he taught in Capernaum. Many therefore of his disciples, when they had heard this, said, This is a hard saying, who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he saith unto them, Doeth this offend you? What if ye shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before? It is the Spirit that quickeneth, the flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that would betray him, who they were that believed not, and who should betray him. And he said, Therefore say I unto you, that no man can come unto me, except it were given unto him of my Father. From that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Then said Jesus unto the 12, Will ye also go away? Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. And we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus answered them, Have not I chosen you 12, and one of you is a devil? He spake of Jesus Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he it was that should betray him, being one of the 12. Okay, that was the Gospel of John, chapter 6. We had read from verse 52 to 71, and next Monday, Lord willing, we'll be picking up in chapter 7. Okay, let's see. Right, we're working and striving to get the paperwork done for the filing of our court case. I'm a little excited about it. It looks like it's going to frame out pretty well. Got a lot of work done over the past week and over the weekend. And we'll keep pressing forward. And I don't want to say we're going to do it, but maybe by next Monday, maybe we'll have it done, or at least to the point where we're getting it perfected in English. We're going to be passing it out to a few people to get comments on it, and also hopefully add and correct things that may be necessary to do so. But hopefully in another week or so, we'll be able to file this paper. The timing is right. This is the time. And everything that's going on, we see what's going on in Washington. We see what went on with Kavanaugh. And we see what the deep state is doing and the war that's going on, the war of words. It's very interesting, and we got a lot of hope as we watch what's going on. I know we've mentioned this before. I'm going to mention it again. In my opinion, one of the best commentaries on what's going on that really seems to give the full picture. The guy does a really great job, and it's X22. Let me see what it's actually called. Hang on one second. You can find this on our website. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Underneath Q, click on the plan to save the world. And you come down, there's a few videos there. If you haven't seen these videos, they're very powerful. You need to see it. I recently put a new video up there. We may have this on our site somewhere else because it kind of looked a little familiar. But I thought it would work good in this page. And that is, actually put two new movies up there. One I know is new and we don't have up here. It's called The Official Trump at War Full Movie. And that was done by Bannon. He's the one that put that together. The other one is The Fall of the Republic. It's a full-length version, and it's very, very interesting. I think we have it somewhere else on our website, but again, I thought it would be appropriate here, and I wasn't sure. But it's the X-22 report that I'm really strongly suggesting. Very comprehensive reporting, extremely comprehensive, doesn't waste your time, gets to the point, lays it out. You know, goes through a lot of what Q has to say. He does rely on some interpretation of some of these things by the nuns out there, but he's got a pretty good grip on interpreting most of it, and he does give a really, really great report on what's going on today and what's going on yesterday and how it affects us. I mean, it's just a very comprehensive reporting of the news. I think second to none, in my opinion. So again, if you haven't checked out the X-22 report, definitely should. You definitely should be watching, if you haven't been following along on that report, you might want to go back a few days to a week. And, you know, these things are anywhere from 20 minutes to 40 minutes long. Very rarely is it anything over that. It's usually one a day. I always look forward to listening in. And then he does some interviews, really great interviews. He'd done an interview with Steele recently, was fantastic. Done an interview with another guy, a doctor, goodness, I forget his name, but he was a very interesting guy. Had a lot of insight and knowledge of what was happening. This guy Steele was an ex-CIA guy, and he seems to really have given us a lot of information, very powerful. And so again, I would say, the interviews in the past week, which is probably about three of them, I think he does one every two or three days, puts it up there. And, of course, the last 5 to 7 days of comprehensive news reporting, blow by blow, what's going on, what the strategy is. And, again, a guy really does his homework. So, anyway, people should go up there and really follow along. Okay, getting back to our court case, like I said, hopefully we're going to get that going real soon. Now, last week we spoke about needing some volunteers. We do have a couple of people who we spoke with today that are interested in working with us as paralegals. If there's anyone else out there that would like to work with us at that level, if you're a paralegal, can help us with some basic paperwork and forms, we'd appreciate the help. I don't think we're going to have a lot of work on that end, but a little bit. Anyway, we also need people. Jen, has anyone volunteered to work? I know we spoke a little bit about this, to get out there to try to get a hold of some talk shows, whether it be on YouTube or whatever, as far as trying to get myself or Gerard for interviews.
Nolan's come forward for that one, John. We're still looking for people.
Okay, so anybody who, basically, we'll have a list of different I don't know what you'd call them, venues or platforms where people are speaking and talking, particularly about the events of the week and the month and so on, what's going on with Q and beyond that, of course, the Patriot movement ultimately. But there's a lot of YouTube channels out there. They got some high-volume people coming to these and listening in, and we'd like to get interviewed by these different YouTube channels. Maybe there's some TV channels, radio channels. and other places. So we do need a couple of people who will make the contact. I think we made contact with Thomas Williams, didn't we? And in fact, I believe we have a schedule for that, don't we? I
don't know if I put it up on my board. I'm scheduled for that on a Thursday.
Let me make a note on that because I don't know whether I put that up on my board. So do you know what time?
Boy, I do not remember the time. I think it was Thursday.
Okay.
Might be three or so. Carl would know. Let's
make sure we connect on that tomorrow to know
the
time. And if there's any way, I don't know if that's a live program or recorded, but anytime we do a program, we need to know whether it's live or recorded. If it's live, we'd like to share that information. People can listen in on the live program. But basically, we need to get our message out, which is really what we're doing, and that is how to teach people how to consent to government through the juries and through the committee man process. Right now, we're focusing in only on the juries. We will on the committee men as time goes on. But, you know, we're building administrations across the nation for individuals in each county. We've got about 1,000 people who have volunteered as administrators. And it's more than volunteering. I mean, they volunteered to get involved, but it's going to be a paid position. It's going to be a something that will be a career position, and it should pay relatively well. But, you know, we the people need to take control of the orientation of the grand juries. We need to train them. You know, we get them for a day, an eight-hour period, and that's pretty much what they get now. They get some kind of orientation. But we want to train them in on history and natural law and jury nullification and what their job really is and kind of just lay out the, you know, what it is that they're going to be doing for the next week or two or more. So we need four administrators in each county, those four administrators will be the investigative body for the grand jury. They'll be the people in between the grand jury and the people. People should have access to the grand jury. They should be able to come in and schedule an appointment and talk with them. But first, of course, they would be interviewed by the administrators. And the administrators might be able to solve the problem with a few phone calls and whatever needs to be done, but if not, then they can give them audience with the grand jury. And maybe if the grand jury, maybe the grand jury can solve the problem without having to send it to the petit jury. But if not, they'll send it into the petit jury for if that's what they decide. You know, whether they get an indictment or whatever, but look at anybody that's been injured, it's a wrongdoing, and you can take it to the grand jury, especially if the wrongdoing was done by an individual working for the government, especially there. but in any event, we figured out we need four administrators for each county, and we also would be the contact people for the grand jury if they want to go outside of the and investigate deeper someplace else or something else they just want to investigate. We'll make sure that they get access, make sure that they get access into different agency offices or wherever it is that they want to investigate, because they can look at anything with the people. The boss needs to come in from time to time, check on things, see how things are running, make sure it's going okay. But anyway, that would be, you know, that access will be able to be put together through by the administrators. You know, someone needs to write up the paperwork for a grand jury when they come to a decision, and the administrators will be trained to do that. We also will want to make sure that they don't get abused by the prosecutors. So, you know, if a prosecutor wants to call the grand jury, that's fine. They're going to have to come to us. And we will be there to make sure that they don't abuse these people and put rings in their noses to try to get their ham sandwich indictments. We'll teach the people the basics of what they need to know concerning natural law and concerning the job that they've got. But in any event, anybody who wants to get into that, you need to, when you take a course, you can check the box to become an administrator. People have access to their information on our website. When you become a member, you can go to your page, which has your details on it, and you can check the box to become an administrator, and then you'll be put into the category within that county. But again, we need about 15,000 people across the nation. We've got about 1,000 already lined up, and we need people to get active on this. The grand jury is one of the most important ways that we, the people, can consent to government. And anybody that the government may try to abuse, it is the grand jury that they should run to be the peacemaker between the government and the people, to make sure that they are not abused. And so this is where we consent to the actions of the government against the people. If they want to get some kind of an indictment, well, they got to come to the people to get that indictment. And we either will indict or we'll deny. And again, you know, the administrators are not the grand jury. The administrators are the people who administrate to the juries, whether it be a petit jury or a grand jury. So that's one way we consent to government. Of course, the main way we consented to government is by the law of the land that we wrote, we the people wrote. And that, of course, is the Constitution. And our founding fathers wrote that not only on their own behalf, but on our behalf, too. So we, the people, wrote this ultimately through our founding fathers for themselves and their posterity. We are their posterity. It's a great document. I don't think we need to be changing or fudging around with it at all. We need to use it first. There's so much that we're not using. Let's use it before we even think about trying to make any more changes. But that's another way that we consent to government. And the third way we consent to government, again, the government will come out and hurt our lives or injure us in one of two ways, politically or judicially. That's the only ways they can hurt us, and the only ways they can try to take our sovereignty away, the only way they can injure us in any way, shape, or form. And as long as we, the people, control the courts, they can't get to us judicially. And as far as destroying this country with bringing in people who are really there for their own purpose and not to become statesmen, they need to go through the people. And right now, the people do not control the political process. But that is another way we consent to government, by taking control of that, that process. Way back when, before the Constitution was written, before we became a nation, when the Declaration of Independence was written, the people at that time had already been getting together and forming what's called committees of safety. Every single founding father, all the people involved in the revolution, in the bringing forth of this nation, all of those people were members of the Committee of Safety. They were the people of the day, the grassroots, who were trying to make a difference, trying to make a change, and stop the abuse of government, and ended up with the Declaration of Independence. It was the Committees of Safety that brought together everyone, all the individuals, in order to form a temporary government. I think there was 10 presidents until the Constitution. But again, we were not formed a nation yet. But I guess it would be more of a coalition, a federation, but not yet we didn't become a nation yet. It was in 1789 when the Constitution was finally signed. I think it was in March somewhere, in 79. And then we became a nation. And the first papers written by the legislators were the Judiciary Act of 1789. Which I think we're going to talk about sometime in the future. We definitely will cover this, some of that anyway, in our course that we're putting together. But anyway, in 1789, we became a nation. The Committees of Safety morphed into the Committeemen. They were not going to give up control of the government. We have government by the consent of the people. And few people understand how we consent. And one of the ways we consent is through the grassroots decision-making of who's going to be on the tickets, as far as being for election. No one gets onto an election ticket. In very rare cases, people can get onto them if they walk their own papers and it's minimum amount of signatures required. I do know some people who got into office that way by walking their own papers because the Republican Party or the Democratic parties wouldn't assist them. So they walked their own papers, and they were able to accomplish the necessary number of signatures to get onto the ballot. But generally speaking, if you're going to run for an assemblyman, a congressman, or any position, a governor, or anybody, you need a whole lot of signatures, and that's where the committeemen come in. They go out and get the signatures. But they're not going to get the, they should not get the signatures of an individual to put them into office unless that person is going to be a statesman, unless that person understands the basics, understands the Constitution. And this is not a difficult book. And matter of fact, we the people need to understand it. We need to understand the powers and the authorities, the jurisdictions. And if we don't, how can we test the people that we elect, whether they should be our representatives here or there or not? Well, so we need to know it, and we need to make sure they know it. And when people kind of want to run for office, who do they go see? They come to see the committeemen. That's the way it works right now. But the committeemen out there today is a captured group, captured by the powers that be. It's a top-down structure. We need to reverse that pyramid, make it a bottom-up structure, and free all the people in the grassroots to make the decisions of any effect, anybody that if that gets elected and affects these individuals within the election subdivisions that they're within. So they get to decide and make an opinion and a decision whether they're going to support a person in their assembly district or their congressional district or running for governor or running for town dog catcher or whatever, you know, anything. Mayor, so on and so forth. And again, if they don't know the Constitution, well, we need to tell them to take a hike and come back when they learn the Constitution. Send them to National Liberty Alliance to learn it. Let them go away for 6 months and come back and say, okay, I did my homework. Well, now they're acceptable, aren't they? And we're going to make sure that they understand that they need to obey that Constitution. Otherwise, we will recall them, and we will not support them in the future for another run for office if they betray us. And that's power, that's authority, that's consent, okay? Right now, it's the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left that you get to vote for, because we, the people, are not controlling that process. It's all a payola thing there. Okay, so anyway, that's who the committeemen are. That's the power and the authority. That's consent. So we can have total 100%. And by the way, we've got the power of recall, okay? The committeemen can recall anyone from office. If they're not happy with someone, they can. All they have to do is get a percentage number of signatures within each of the districts or political subdivisions. So many signatures within the political subdivisions, and then put up the ballots for running for recall and reelection to fill that particular vacancy. And so that's done by the committeemen also. These are simple processes. The committeemen do not put a lot of time into this. If they put, in a year's time, maybe they put 8 or 10 days of work a year into the process. Most of their work is around the election district time. Most of it is interviews and walking for signatures within their own election district. And usually they're not required to get many more than maybe 20 signatures apiece, and you have enough to bring these people onto the ballot. But again, if we want to take control of our nation, we have to fill the void that's going to be made very soon when this deep state is taken out, because the whole system is going to fall apart as far as their structure and power, politically speaking, and we the people need to be there to catch it and take control. We also need to be there to take control of our courts. You know, the United States Supreme Court, they have control of the equity courts, but they do not have control of the common law courts. Our decision is higher than their decision. When we, the people, make a decision as a jury, they do not get to second guess it. They do not get to overturn it. They do not get to say anything, because our decision is final. And the United States Supreme Courts, on many occasions, have said such also. They know. But right now, courts of justice are closed. That's an absolute. You know, I've been back and forth figuring out somewhere, somehow, some way. But until we go take this next case forward, which is really what we've been looking for to do for many, many years now, because this is the place we were looking to get to, is to take this real big case going after the judiciary to bring back courts of justice, courts that operate under the natural law, under the common law, a.k.a. natural law, laws of God, laws written in the hearts of men, and not laws written by men. That's called positive law. I'm very interested they chose that word, positive law, but anyway, that's human-made law, And they can only make law that we have defined that they can do so in. And, of course, that's in Article 1, Section 8. We need to know these things. And again, there's not much to it. Spend some time reading and studying, and before you know it, it'll just be falling off your tongue. So we need to take control. We need to have the knowledge. We need to get educated. And then we need to make sure that people come into office understand the oath that they're taking. Because 99.9%, well, let's say 99%, and I think it's probably higher than 99% of the people in there that are in office have no clue on what the Constitution says. They lift up their hands and they swear to obey, defend, and support. And how can they defend and support a Constitution that they have no clue what it says? How can they swear an allegiance and swear to support it if they have to go to a bar attorney to understand it, who doesn't understand it at all, by the way, and is the minions of the New World Order? You know, the bar, a bar taught school or a bar school is important to have. And the bar itself is important to have. But it's a captured group, been so since its inception. It's controlled by the New World Order, the powers that be. And we need to make that disconnect. And we'll talk more about law. Or maybe we'll talk a little bit about it tonight, but if not, another time. You know, these things are important that people are educated in the law. But we, the people, need to be educated in the Constitution. We need to be educated in how a court of justice is structured, how it operates, how it runs, how to get into it, and how to defend within it. And again, this is not difficult stuff. There's tens of thousands of pages to read and study if you get involved in the equity side of the court or the positive law side of the court. You know, there's two different laws that's – let me see if I can find this. Hang on a second. I think I have a copy of this to read. Yes, Article 3, Section 2. The judicial powers shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and it goes on, talks about the treaties and under what authorities and ambassadors and so on and so forth. But there's only two forms of law here in the United States, and that's law and equity. It took me a while to really figure a lot of this stuff out, and my thinking and understanding have changed a little here and there as time has gone on. But I've discovered that equity courts, the difference between an equity court and a court of law, and that is the key thing that we need to understand. You know, I did a study in Black's Law to see how many different courts there are. And I forget the number, but it's something like 49 or 51 different courts that are spoken about in Black's Law and also Brovier's. Most of those courts have nothing to do with us, but we do need to understand that. We do need to understand the authorities as we read through Black's Law to study that, to see that we need U.S. Decisions, and the decisions have to apply either towards courts of equity or courts of law. And we need to understand the difference. Now, you know, there is what's called chancery, and that's a statutory process. It's an equity process. But in the old English, it used to be chancellors instead of judges, and they would call them chancery courts, I believe. Today, in some places, Pennsylvania calls them chancery courts, I believe, and there's a few other places that use that word chancery, or they use even chancellor, okay, as a judge. We use the word judges. In the Judiciary Act 1789, which I've referred back to many times in the past, focused in on chancery. And I kind of misunderstood. I went back recently to read that again and saw that it said something different than I thought. We are under the rules of chancery in the sense towards American jurisprudence. And the United States Supreme Court makes that point. That chancery courts are okay as long as they are compatible with our Constitution. Unfortunately, most of our courts are not compatible with our Constitution, or they're fraudulent courts, which, you know, again, that's another subject on its own. But in any event, you know, we do operate under rules that are statutory, and that's important to realize. So my position and thinking on the idea of the rules of chancery in the Judiciary Act of 1789 being null and void, as laid out through Marbury versus Madison, I think that was 1802, if I recall, 1803, somewhere around there. And but I was in error on that. I've come to realize that we do have these statutory courts. There's nothing wrong with a statutory court, providing it's used within the jurisdiction that it was meant to be used in. And so let me give you an example. We do have rules. There's rules of the court and the process of the court. Generally speaking, they're called, you know, the federal rules, looking at the federal level anyway. And I've been studying that for a while now, and I've come to the conclusion I really haven't found too much of a problem with it, although I haven't gotten over into the law of the sea side of it, because there is maritime law that's also heard in the same courts that we go to. You see, all these courts, they have a total of approximately 54 jurisdictions. One court, federal district courts, okay? And the judges that fill those courts are judges that are appointed by the president to fill these positions and approved by Congress. And they fill these positions in the federal district courts that we go to. But they hear 54 different jurisdictions. If a case comes up within that within their jurisdiction, their political jurisdiction or boundaries within that federal district court, whether it be maritime law or something to do with an individual becoming a citizen, there's all kinds of different law. For instance, there's law on the president. It's Title USC Title III. There's laws concerning the flag, the seal, the seat of government, and the states. Okay, and that's USC Title IV. There's armed forces law, that's USC Title 10, okay, and so on. And there's a total of 54, but there are a few of them that are vacant. You know, they just don't have any title yet, but they're reserved. Like USC Title 53 is a reserved title. There's nothing there. But there's two different kind of laws here. Of the 54 different titles, half of them, which would be 27 titles is what's called positive law. In other words, they've been enacted by Congress, and it is the law of the land. Okay, and but they can only operate within their jurisdiction. And anybody within their jurisdiction has agreed to that jurisdiction, because maybe they're an elected individual, an appointed individual, an individual employed by the government. Well, they fall under, because they have certain powers working for the government, they also are controlled by, well, we can call it policies and procedures, but it's even more than that. These are codes. These are different, they're actual law, USC. United States codes under certain titles, and each title has its own jurisdiction, and so on. So when a judge hears a court case, he is listening into that court case under the jurisdiction. Now, this is where I've always been confused, but I think I'm getting a much better grip and understanding on it now, and I've been growing on this as time has gone, and my opinion has changed a little bit because I've seen things that I didn't see before. And that is that, as we spoke in the Constitution, there is equity and law. And so equity, what is equity? Equity ultimately is a court where there's one person, one jurist, called the judge, and he or she listens to the case and makes a decision. If people aren't happy with that decision, there's an appellate process. So it could be overturned, okay? And they go through the Court of Appeals, and it could work its way all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, the top nine guys. And that's equity courts. Now, courts of law, okay? I always known that courts of law identify with courts of justice, that which is driven by natural law, right? And that I know is a court of law, and that requires a jury. It's called a court of record, okay? Now, there is 27, USC titles, okay, that's called positive law. Positive law means law created by humans, okay? And the law created by humans here in the United States is lawful only if the legislators created the law and they had the power and the authority to create that law. And so they have to be able to trace that power and that authority back into the Constitution under Article 1, Section 8 particularly. There are other restrictions in Article 1, Section 9 and Section 10. There are some restrictions there, the Bill of Rights restrictions and so on and so forth. So, you know, you have to look at the Constitution as a whole to see how it may apply towards these courts. Anything repugnant to any place in the Constitution, whether it be in one of the other articles or whether it be in the Bill of Rights or it would be in the Declaration of Independence, then it's null and void if it's repugnant, particularly to the Bill of Rights. But anyway, I struggled a lot with this judge making a decision in a court, and I've come to realize as I'm studying this, and I believe I'm correct on this, and that is that a court of law could also be a court of positive law. As long as they have the jurisdiction, they have the subject matter jurisdiction, and they have the personam jurisdiction. If a person is elected, let's just take someone that's in government. If they're an elected individual, appointed individual, a hired individual, they are restricted and restrained. They've got an administrative process that they've agreed to when they came in. They've taken an oath to the Constitution, and they fall under the laws because they've been given certain powers. They fall under statutory laws. And it's proper. But in the places where you have 27 different titles that have been enacted, and therefore they are called positive law. They've been enacted by Congress. They are the law of the land. By the way, USC 18, where you find the penal code, is found in there. But just looking at the whole, okay, judges have the authority to make a lot of decisions in these courts. They can run them as an equity court, or the people can require and ask and require a jury. But it would be a statutory control to jury. Because, you see, there's a contract here. There's an agreement. You could put it as, we can call these courts nisi prius courts, because unless first. But it's more than a nisi prius court, because, you know, you could agree to this court the moment you take the job on to work for the government. If there's some commercial activity going on that we've given the power and the authority to control this particular activity to Congress, and you can find out about this in Article 1, Section 8, if we've given them the powers there, then it's lawful. And people can have a court of record, a jury trial. Now, this is where it becomes a little touchy, and I haven't figured this out yet. But, you know, there is jury nullification, so maybe I just answered my own concern or question. If a jury makes a decision in a case that's controlled by statutes, and they nullify the statute that might convict them or make things harsher or require a certain amount of time in jail or something, and say, no, we don't agree with that. Maybe they should do 3 months in jail, or maybe they should do something else to make restitution to the people somehow, some kind of work for the community or something. I don't know. I mean, that's where we really need to be creative. We don't need to be sending people to jail. We should get them to be constructive and make it worthwhile, and it's something that will really turn the people to behave more than get angry and become hardened criminals, you know, sending them into prison. A prison is for people who are violent. Prison is for people who are murderers. It certainly isn't, in my opinion, for anything else. There's other things that could be done for the people to restore back to whoever they injured. It could be the people as a whole, okay? But again, these are in courts that are controlled by statutes that is proper and lawful that we, the people, have given, vested these people power and authority to write laws and to exercise these laws in the federal courts. But outside of that, outside of, you know, kind of getting involved in something administrative in the sense that we agree upon before we start, and outside of that, then the only other court left is a court of law called the Court of Justice, and that is driven by natural law. No statutes at all, zero statutes. We can have rules to some degree, but if the rules affect a person's access into the court, they have to be ignored. You know, again, the Supreme Court has ruled on some occasions that the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is an affidavit. That's the only thing necessary. You can get a pencil and a roll of toilet paper and write your case down and hand it in and just get it notarized, and it works. That's it. It's as good as anything else. So people don't really have to be deeply educated, but we do have to have some rules, some forms, and try to drive people in a certain way to, you know, why reinvent the wheel over and over again? So there's nothing wrong with the court rules and forms as long as they're not destructive. And if people don't know them and they want to come into the court, then they're going to have to deal with those people because they have a right to come in. But anyway, getting back into these courts of record or courts of law, any court that is controlled by enacted legislation is a lawful court, a court of law, and can be a court of record, I believe, if the people require a grand jury for a decision and not be controlled in an equity court, which means the judge makes the decision. When people have disagreements and one person sues another, if it's over $20, they have the option to ask, well, not ask, but demand a court of record, which means a court decided by a jury of their peers. They have an absolute right to that. We've written it into the Constitution. But if they don't ask for that, and the process goes on, they're going to be in an equity court where one jurist, an individual called the judge, will make the decision. And you know what? If they're obedient to the Constitution, they're in good behavior, they're looking for the just decision, which is what they should be, operating under American jurisprudence, which is where they get their knowledge on how to rule and all these different things statutorily, and they're operating under those conditions, you should get a just decision by one jurist. But of course, there is an appellate process there. In a court of record, there is no appellate process. You don't get to appeal a court of record decision. That's a court that is decided by a jury. Okay, there is no second guessing. Anytime you hear about these appeals and stuff, yeah, they need to be looked into. You know, let's say a murder case or something. You could take any kind of a case, but let's say a murder case, criminal case, murder, and they're found guilty. Well, the individual can appeal it, but what they got to find is a major flaw within the case that made it such a gross misjustice that something could be done about it, and the appellate court could get involved with it. They cannot turn over a decision of a jury, though. And basically, I think the rule of thumb would be violating someone's unalienable rights inside that court somehow. And that would be the only that could be the only change that can be affected in that case. If the people decided that someone was guilty of murder, and they said they need the death penalty, we're calling for the death penalty, period, there is no appeal from that. Unless somehow an unalienable right was violated in that court somehow. Without that, there is no appeal from that case. It's a trial by jury. And it's important to realize and understand the difference. But again, you go into court, you have a contract disagreement, maybe you have a written contract, written agreement, one person breaks it, sues the other person. If it's over $20, either one of them can request a jury. If they don't, they're going to go in what's called an equity court. A judge will make a decision. An appellate process is available. It only go up so high, and then final decisions are made, and it's over. When the United States Supreme Court makes a final decision on it, it is final for eternity, period. Same thing with a trial jury, final for eternity, period. It's a matter of the record. So therein is the difference between an equity court at a court of law. And again, my thinking was a court of law was only under natural law in courts of justice run by law, natural law, and no statute at all. But I think I'm in error with that, and I believe that the courts of law, which is, again, statutory, is lawful to people who have agreed to participate within that administrative process for maybe they're working, they make money, or whatever the case may be, commercial activities taking place, and so on. So hopefully everybody understands that. It's important to understand these concepts I'm talking about as far as the U.S. titles, positive law, enacted law. 27 USCs that have been enacted and 27 USCs have not been enacted. What about the ones that have not been enacted? Well, they're administrative. They'd be nisi prius. They cannot fine. They cannot incarcerate. Juries and trials cannot be requested. It's really a matter of policies and procedures. And it's not, and it doesn't go into the federal courts. It's usually decided by people who are arbitrators. That's what that other parts of the 27 USCs that have not been enacted as law, so therefore they're not tried in a federal court system, federal district court, but in a room with a number of people and someone that's an arbitrator. And there is an appellate process from there which can work you right into the courts, okay? But you have to start at the lower level and work your way through, because remember, you came into the game agreeing to the game. You have to participate in the game, and you could try to take it out if you can make a position and convince the upper courts to hear it. And all this sounds logical, it sounds good, and it's proper, it's just, and so on. But they have hidden our courts of natural law, totally hidden. We have done everything we could, every way we could, with the right words, without the man on the land stuff and clicking the heels, but putting the words of the law onto the paper, requiring pressing, and it's fraud because they have done everything they can to conceal a court of justice. They've done everything they can to prevent us from accessing into courts of justice, and that's what this next court case is all about. This is the court case we have been building up to for, what, 6 years or however long we've been doing this now, 5 or 6 years, I don't even remember. But we have been building up to this point for many years now to get to this point. We've done everything we've done in the past so many years since we started National Liberty Alliance to build to this point. And what's amazing is we've also come to a time, a place in time, where we have a president which is bringing back the rule of law and requiring the rule of law. Not half the law, not part of the law, not law for one and not for the other. No, a law. If someone's guilty, they're guilty. You know, I am absolutely convinced very soon we're going to be seeing people go to trial that we never thought would go to trial. I think we're going to see Obama go to trial. I think we're going to see the Clintons go to trial. We're going to see a lot of people. And some of these people are going to get the death penalty because it's called for that. They've committed treason on the highest level. They're responsible for the deaths of many, many people. But in any event, the point is the swamp is being drained. Trump has been in there 2 years, has made almost 2 years, made major changes, moving towards the rule of law. Things are about to happen. People are turning in droves towards, ultimately at this point, the Republican Party. Not that they're any better than the Democratic Party, because we have the enemies in the Republican Party as much as, well, there's probably more in the Democratic Party than in the Republican Party, but nevertheless, they're in both. But we're at a point where the rule of law is about to be pressed upon, and our voice, we the people, need to be heard, and they need to be heard in this case that we're doing right now, that we're preparing for, that we're getting ready to file. And that's why Gerard and I need to go out, start talking to, you know, groups of people concerning what it is we're doing and sharing the paperwork that we're going to be filing. We'll probably do a YouTube on it and post it on the case itself. But we do want to be interviewed. We're looking for that critical mass. We need that critical mass. We're just about almost 7,000 members now. I think we're 25 short or 23 short of 7,000 members. But I think once we get into moving around to the TV programs, the radio programs, the YouTube programs, and so on, and get the word out to these larger groups, we will start to hopefully get to that critical mass. But nevertheless, our paperwork is at the right timing. We're at the right place at the right time. We couldn't have planned it better. As a matter of fact, we didn't plan it. You know, we just figured we'd be where we got to be when we're there. And we're there, and we're where we need to be. So this is an important case, an important paper we need to file, and we need to go forward. And the people need to understand this case. Understanding this case will understand the problem. They have robbed us of a court of justice. That is the key here. By robbing us of a court of justice, they have robbed us of due process. They've robbed us of our right to consent to government. They have robbed us of all of our unalienable rights, whether they're in the 10th Amendment or not. We have lots of unalienable rights. Now, courts of justice are courts of natural law, and there can be no statutes, no statutes at all. For we have not given Congress the authority to write any statute, to write any positive law, to write any U.S. codes concerning our behavior. Our behavior is between us and our maker. Someone wants to stick a needle in their arm, that's their business. Right? We should try to convince them that they shouldn't do it, to talk to them about the dangers, and try to turn their way of thinking. But if that's what they want to do, then that's what they're going to do. And we don't have any authority to intervene. That's between them and their maker. And if we were obedient to the law and taught our children to be obedient to the law, it's framed up in the schools and in our homes and the way that they should walk in the law, not only the law of the land, but the law of God, which is the ultimate in the heart, we won't have these problems with many people sticking needles. And you will have someone. You'll always have someone who's had problems or whatever and just as a problem individual. It's always going to be there. We're not going to get rid of that. But we can definitely reduce the numbers of those people. By just teaching, you know, people to behave and control themselves, and starts with our children in school. Get civics going, get constitutional courts going, getting to teach morality, what's right and wrong, you know, both in the home and in the school. All right, but going back here now, courts of justice, we've been robbed, okay? No statutes are to be in the courts of justice. Courts of justice are run by the people. It is the people who decide. Not a judge, and not any political figure or an individual. They don't get to decide anything in a court of justice. It's the 12 individuals in the bench there that's going to make the decision. And they're looking at the facts, and they get to decide what the law is. They get to decide what the restitution is. They get to decide if jail is required, and that should be bare minimum, rarely. Unless there's a violence involved here, and even sometimes violence isn't not necessarily that someone's violent, maybe someone snapped or something, you know, but as long as no one's been killed, maybe that doesn't necessarily mean someone needs to go to jail. But we need to train the people on natural law. We need to train the people on the law of the heart, the principles of common law, the history of America and how we've come together as a people and the Constitution. So that and how they need to take a vow to God, not only to uphold the Constitution, but a vow to God to justly decide and at the end of the day consider mercy. You know, when the end of the day comes, mercy has to be the final consideration. Okay, we're going to decide we're going to give this person mercy or not. We decided they're guilty. We decided this. So we decided a judgment. Can we have any mercy here? Is the death penalty the required remedy? Is some other kind of restitution the required remedy? You know, that's where the people got to figure it out, not a judge, not lawmakers, not statutes. That has nothing to do with common law, has nothing to do with natural law, has nothing to do with courts of justice. So we need to understand this. We need to get this out to the people to understand it. It doesn't get much more difficult than I've just laid it out. I mean, there's more to it, but this is the guts of the matter. This is the foundation of what we're talking about. These are the boundaries of our understanding necessary to really get involved here. And everyone should know it. Anyone coming out of school should know these things. This should be common knowledge. Right now it's not. You know, keep the slaves stupid. As long as you can keep them dumb, can't read and write, can't understand the Constitution in this case, okay? Well, they don't know nothing about the Constitution. They don't know what liberty really is. They don't know what law really is. They don't know what a court of justice really is. Boy, we could really take advantage of those people, can't we? Well, that's what they've done. Woe is us, because we have not educated ourselves. And now that we know it, and if we don't educate it, we deserve what we get. So it's up to the people to step up and take control. We need to understand this process. We need to understand how it works. And it's that simple. And again, this court case is about regaining back our courts of natural law. That's what it's about. As a matter of fact, you know, because of the total misunderstanding by everyone in the legal field concerning the difference, what common law really is, what they think it is, which is Roman law, identifies with statutes, and not Supreme Court rulings, but federal district rulings. When a federal court makes a decision, they use that as part of their process to decide on other cases. Boy, that is not common law. That's horrible law. Most of these people are political animals, and they don't respond to American jurisprudence, and they're out of control. They're upholding the status quo. And now we're going to get to the biggest sin of all. Penal code, federal penal code. The federal courts have no business to bring the people into the courts for anything. Let me repeat that. The federal courts have no authority, no business to bring any cases against any of the people. That has to do with the courts, the state courts. That's the power and the authority of the state. And they need to work, and it can't be statutory down there. USC 18, Title 18, okay, that's where you find the penal code. And the jurisdiction for USC 18 is maritime law. Let me repeat that. USC 18 is maritime law. It's the law of the sea. It has nothing to do with the law of the land. And anytime the government comes out after the people, it's always USC 18, unless, of course, it's the tax court. And they have this crazy idea that they can create what's called an Article I court, a subject matter all on its own. We'll talk about it another time. No such thing as an Article I court. It doesn't exist. You'll find it on the Federal District Court's pages. I think you'll find it even on the United States Supreme Court. I think I saw it there. I'm looking now to see if I can find it, because I forget where I saw it. But I know I saw it on the federal courts. And it doesn't exist. Title 26 is no law at all. As a matter of fact, the day it was enacted, U.S. Title 26 was enacted into law, and the same day was repealed. Go figure that out. Okay? And you'll find the repeal in small little notes, footnotes, or you'll find it in the index where it'll say repealed. It's U.S. 26. I'm trying to think what it's called, where it's found. I think it's subsection 1, as a matter of fact, under USC 26. But it's kind of hidden. You don't see it. And maybe they, first of all, people are being tried in the jurisdiction of maritime under U.S. 18, and nobody objects. Why is that? Are we that dumb? Are lawyers that dumb that they don't see it, maritime law? Have they ever looked it up? Why haven't they looked it up? You know? You're going to tell us that the United States Supreme Court doesn't have this knowledge, that people are being defrauded into a court that has nothing to do with them? It's a fraud. Taking control, what you're saying is you're taking away the sovereignty of individuals by saying you're subjects to us under USC 18. How can that be? How can we let that be? The United States Supreme Court is guilty. They know all these things. The federal judiciary is guilty. They know all these things. The Judiciary Committee in both houses, if they don't know all these things, shame on them. They should know all these things. They're guilty. Okay? The Bar Association teaches all this stuff and decides what it's going to teach and what it's not going to teach. They're guilty. Those are the individuals we're suing. Those individuals should know. Those individuals should look at this is subversion against the United States. And their own law requires if a judge or someone realizes and understands, they have to do something about that. They know, they understand, and they haven't done anything about it. Why? That's what this case is all about. And if we don't fight this case, there's no one out there fighting this case. There's no one else out there building this case. I'm not aware of anyone. If anyone is, I'd like to know about it. Maybe we should join forces with them. There's no one out there chasing the case that we're chasing. And if we don't fight this battle and don't settle this issue, then shame on us. We deserve everything we get. We have to fight this issue. We have to fight this battle, and we have to win. And we can't stop until we win, because until then, we the people are not sovereign. So U.S. 18, where the penal code is not law. There was something a while back. I don't know if Gerard's here. Is Gerard here? I don't see him. He said he was going to be late. There was something way back when we discovered, and I forget where it was. I got to go hunt it out. And it's in the rules where you have 15 days to deny, or you're in it and you can't get out. And that identifies with maritime law. And now that I've come to understand U.S. 18, now I understand. You fall under that jurisdiction, and within a period of time, you continue in that jurisdiction, and you don't deny that jurisdiction. You don't object to that jurisdiction. Guess what? You're in that jurisdiction. According to their rules, according to their statutes or their rules. Matter of fact, it's rules. But rules are not law to begin with. And fraud is fraud. If you hide something from people, try to get them into a contract and say, yeah, you're in a contract. No, it's too late. You've been working too long. You're in a contract. Well, I didn't know it was a contract. I didn't know this. It doesn't matter. See, if you hold anything back in a contract, all contract is void. Okay? If you make anything in a contract secret, it's void. The United States Supreme Court knows this. The federal judiciary knows this. The Bar Association knows this. Both houses knows this. They're guilty. And if we were to call for removal from office and incarceration for all of these people involved, there would be no Supreme Court. There would be no judiciary. There'd be no Bar Association. There'd be no two houses of judiciary committees. They just wouldn't be there. And so, it's a very touchy situation. We have to come in with a olive branch, and we have to let people know now is the time, either work with the people, repent, and do the right thing, or we're coming out after you. Okay, so that brings us to the end of that. Also brings us to a thing. Next week, I'm not sure what day, Jan will get word out. We'll send it out a few reminders. We're going to be calling together the grand jury for the sole purpose of agreeing on an indictment, automatic indictment, for anyone who tries to obstruct the case that we're going to file. We will make that clear in the very beginning of the case under an extraordinary process that we're going to write up. We'll make it clear, anybody that tries to injure this case, to thwart this case, to hide this case, remove this case, conceal this case, make a decision in this case, is going to be automatically indicted. It's an automatic indictment. Now, we have to get people together to agree on this, and I believe we'll get that agreement, and we will write it up in the paperwork when we serve the papers, and we will start building. Anybody who sticks their foot in the door to try to prevent us from entering, or however you want to put that, then it'll be an automatic indictment. We will write the indictment up. We'll file it in the other case where we have as a depository. We'll also file it in this case, and we will move on. But we need to make these people understand that they need to get behind us. They need to support us. Judges with a conscience, judges who do want to, do the right thing. Anybody in the judiciary, anybody in anywhere in any of these groups, we're there with the olive branch. And again, if we put everyone in jail that's guilty, it'd be a ghost town. All right, let me see what else we have here. Is Brent here, by the way? I don't see Brent. I know today is a holiday, so. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Do we have any other announcements? Let me just go real quick. We've got two people, who are paralegals, going to be working with us. We're going to try to work details out in the next week or two, and hopefully we'll be back to doing habeas corpuses and nonjudicial foreclosures again. And again, those who have done them in the past and have not been successful, they are being entered into the court case. Justice at some point will be met. We need help with, but anybody else that's a paralegal who wants to help, we can use more people, of course. The more the merrier. We also need more people on the welcoming committee. So please, you know, that's making a couple of phone calls a week here or there, trying to reactivate people who kind of went silent for a while, trying to get people, new people coming in to show them what needs to be looked at so they can understand what we're doing, answer some questions, try to energize and, you know, get the people moving along. Get them educated. Let them know about our Monday night programs. Let them know about our free courses and so on. So we need people for the welcoming committee. We also need people who can go out and make contact with different groups where we can be interviewed to get the message out. So anybody who can participate with that or any of these things, get a hold of Jan. You can find him under our directory. He should be up towards the top. He's the national leader. Jan, his phone number will be there, and his email is Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Get in touch with him, and let's try to... There's other things we're doing also, or maybe people have some other ideas, and maybe we could do other things. But we need volunteers, more the merrier. Okay, that brings me to an end, Jan. Do you have any announcements or anybody that needs to get up here and talk? And by the way, let me move into the Q&A before he starts. Hold on. Anybody who has a question or a comment would like to get into the queue, star 6. Go ahead, Jan, anything?
I have a question for you, and the only comment I have, in addition to the people that you've requested so far, we could use some additional speakers for the natural healing calls. There, we've had some real interesting ones in the past here, and we're hoping to find some more. And if you're ready for questions, I do have one for you.
Yeah, go right ahead, Jan.
Okay. Is it
anybody
possible?
Else has a question or a comment, star 6 to get into the queue. We have one person in the queue right now. Anybody else, star 6. Jan?
Okay. Is it possible to opt out of Medicare without jeopardizing your Social Security entitlements? I didn't know they were entitlements.
Yeah, you know, that's a strange thing. I'm so aggravated with the Social Security system. You know, I was in it from a different perspective when it was an insurance. And then it became this, and it became that. Nobody knows anything. They change the rules from over the years as time goes on. And it definitely is not an entitlement, although they're trying to make it an entitlement. They cannot fulfill Social Security for everyone anymore. So they call it an entitlement. There are criteria. If you earn a certain amount of money, you can't get it, so on and so forth. As far as Medicare, you say Medicare, C-A-R-E, right?
Medicare, yes.
You don't have to get Medicare. Nobody has to get Medicare. Usually when you get Social Security, what they'll do is they'll kind of give it to you and start taking money out of your check. And you can say, whoa, wait a minute. I don't want to get that. Leave me alone. Now, if you're at a real low income and you don't have any other income, usually they'll put you into Medicare anyway, and it'll be free. It'll be part of the process. A lot of people don't know that. But if you really, if you don't have any much more of an income than what you're getting through Social Security, you can call them up and say, take me off. I can't afford it. I'd like to get Medicare, but I can't afford it. I think they're obligated to give it to you then. But if you've got your own medical coverage from some other place, you don't have to take Medicare. I mean, they send you a card, rip it up if you want. Who cares if you've got coverage from another place? But you could tell them, hey, don't need it. So, no, there's no requirement of people participating in Medicare. Is that the only question?
That was the only one tonight, John.
Okay. All right, we'll go to our callers. Our first caller is Crystal. How you doing, Crystal? It's been a while since we spoke. I'm sure you got some new news for us, so let me... You got the mic.
Hello.
Hey, Crystal.
Hello. How you doing?
Hello.
Okay, yes. I sent you that package a few weeks ago, and I told you how the judge had recused himself. Now three other ones recused themselves. The other attorneys came off the case. All right, so because we were supposed to get back together, and I did send something, another statement, motion of order, for my case to be totally dismissed and discharged. The judge then said, oh, I cannot do anything because I have no jurisdiction over you, you know. And then she said, well, you don't have to come back to court or whatever. I said, I don't want to be at the court. I said, you keep on sending me the letters, but nobody's signing off on it, which that was another thing that everybody got to pay close attention to, because it's all fraudulent what they're sending out. So now I get a letter from the appellate court. Alrighty, and they said that my case was frivolous, and that they gave this Judge Jennings the permission to start the foreclosure on my property. And guess who signed off on the paper? Everybody pay close attention to anything you get from the court. It was the assistant clerk. So I made the copy, send it back, and I said, this is a mortgage fraud, and I said, and I wrote the question, where's the judge? Who's the judge? No judge, nobody signed off on it. And then I had it also addressed to the judge, the retired judge, who perpetrated a fraud on my case and put it back in his name, which he's no longer there. Again, the assistant clerk. So that's like you getting a release letter from the hospital, and who has to sign off on it? The nurse's aide or the doctor? The doctor always has to sign off on it. So it's just like any legal document.
Absolutely, and that shows that they're not giving you due process. That proves it. And by the way, I did come upon your paperwork. I know we did file some papers for you. I did come upon it a week or two ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago, but I haven't seen you. And I thought I had it on my table, my desk, but I have to look for it. But we did file some papers for you way back when, and so that process has been done. I think if you're concerned, I think it's time to move it into federal court for cause. You know,
okay.
Lack of grounds. Because right there, you just proved that there's no due process. I mean, how do they come and take something away from you without going through a court of justice and giving you the due process in that court of justice and then the signature of a judge with a seal? If, and since it's over $20, you know, hey, what a trial by jury.
Right.
You don't want a statutory jury. You don't want a jury of 6 or 10. You want a jury of 12 in a court of justice, which makes it either a state court or a county court. And you want a jury there untainted with the understanding and knowledge of jury nullification and not controlled by statutes. They're not going to give you that, but that's what you're going to require, and that's what you should kind of prepare your paper requirements for. Give them X amount of days to respond, and then move it into the federal court for cause, which is violating your right of due process. You will win on the principle there. You don't even have to bring up what it's about. It's a mortgage case or this or that. No. The fact is they're trying to take your house away. They're not giving you due process. Without due process, you can't take my things. Do you get that, Crystal?
Unmuted.
Okay,
hello?
Yeah, you're unmuted.
Okay,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay, the due process. Also, I did a police report. That was about several months ago.
You know what I'm going to do? You know, by the way, I want to mention this. I forgot to mention this. We're working on this case, and hopefully the case is going to be done in a week. And we've got enough stuff that hopefully we'll be able to open up our new course, okay? And it's going to be a really comprehensive course. But hopefully we'll be able to get a couple of chapters up there and start building up and get it done over the next few months, but and get people coming in to take that course. But one of the things I'm going to file in that court, course, I don't know if I'll get it in the beginning. I'd like to. But the process of how to move a case, you know, kind of a form on how to move the case into the federal court, of course. It's a very simple form that we can create and people can use. But you do need to maintain your jurisdiction and keep focused. You know, and you got to always understand the jurisdiction that you're in. When a judge makes a decision that gets you scratching your head, the question needs to be asked, Your Honor, did we just change jurisdictions? What jurisdiction are we in right now? Because jurisdictions in federal court change as the conversations go, okay? And you got to be careful to understand that and realize that. If you're going to hold someone liable under U.S. codes, whether it be U.S. codes 18 and 42, which is the usual codes used in order for people who are using color of law against you, well, remember, U.S. 18 is maritime law. It puts them under that, and that's okay because they're in. It identifies also with the territories and the authority within that courthouse or within those people who are employed or participating or whatever. We've given them that authority, so that could be applied towards them. But you got to make sure that applying that towards them hasn't moved the whole case under the jurisdiction of U.S. 18 and or 42, because now you're outside of the court of law. Now you're outside of the court of justice, that which is run by natural law. And this is the tricky part in the federal courts. And I've given a lot of thought on a case that I'd won a while back, and there's a couple of things we did. And one of the things it didn't really dawn on me, but it's been really pressing me heavy, and I'm convinced is one of the major reasons why the court case didn't proceed, was because I told the judge on numerous occasions he didn't have any power or any authority to give me remedy. Okay, that's what I told him on a couple occasions. And he kind of didn't say or do anything about that. And I think that was the main thing. He understood that I understood something. At the time, I really didn't understand it, though, as I do now. But he realized that he's going to get his toes chopped off. Maybe he's putting himself at risk, and that's why he forced the IRS to settle the matter, and in my favor. And so that is an important point to realize. If you're in a wrong jurisdiction, they cannot give you a remedy. And if that judge is holding statutes upon you, you're in the wrong jurisdiction. If that judge is making summary judgments concerning you, you're in the wrong jurisdiction. And by the way, that judge said he was going to make decisions within the next 2 or 3 weeks and gave me time to put more paper in, and I put my paper in quickly and settled the matter from my perspective. And I never heard a word from that judge again. He never made another decision. And the agreement behind the scenes took place and was settled. And they never closed the case. Now, I got a paper about 8 months to a year later saying that the case was cast out for not being moved. I forget, that wasn't the words being used, but the words similar to that means that the case wasn't moved, that I wasn't moving the case, therefore it was stagnant and they just threw it out. You know, I realized that they didn't have that power or authority to do that because he's the one that didn't make the decision. He's the one that made it stagnant. And to this day, he still hasn't made a decision. So the case ultimately is still open. And that's an important point for me anyway, for other things that I'm doing. But it's something you got to realize on, you know, things we don't really think about or things that mean a lot more than we realize. And the fact that they cannot give you remedy, that this court cannot give me remedy, okay, is an important point, and that's a jurisdictional point. And so people need to think about those things. And when you get into these courts, remember anything you say in that court, if it's in contradiction to the paperwork you filed, you just changed the whole direction maybe by making a statement or doing something, you might have changed the jurisdiction. So you got to be real careful You know, I like Thornton's idea. Don't say much at all. Just, I object. Well, what are you objecting? Well, I'll write you a paper, you know, because you can go home and think about it and be clear and be careful. In court, you may not be as clear and as careful. So, anyway. Crystal, go ahead. You're muted, by the way, so we're not hearing you if you're talking. Star 6.
Unmuted.
Oh.
You go.
Hi. I have to be in court tomorrow morning. Also, what has been very helpful, too, was that foreign exchange form that I sent you
mm-hmm.
from 1938.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent you that cover letter and all the people that I CC'd it to. All righty. And that is for the, because they are not registered. They are not in Washington. They don't record that for the simple reason because they're not paying taxes on it. So what I did on last Thursday, I sent them, all the attorneys, judges, and all that, I said, please respond and fill this out. Make sure it's on record by October 5th before 5 p.m. Friday. So I sent it, in fact, to all of them. So what they did, because today being a holiday, they sent me the letters, and I got four of them for the court for the 9th of October. So they must have waited until late Thursday to put it in the mail, knowing that I could not respond to them on what they had sent me because court was closed today. But I did send it off to them on Thursday and Friday, and I had facts, so I got the confirmation. What they've been doing, they have not been showing up. Another thing, too, I have to share with you. Everything, when I go into the court, I said, I am the authorized representative, and I say my full name and agent. And the judge said, what is your name? I said, I am the authorized representation of, you know, my name again and agent. And everything I sign, I write by, B-Y, colon, my full name, comma, agent, and anything we sign, whether it's a check, anything, you write by, colon, your first and last name, comma, agent. So that nobody can't sit there and use your name pertaining to it. So I have a strong feeling tomorrow, because they did not respond to that 1938, and now everybody else is following that up here also, they are not showing up. The judge did say, I have no authorization over you, you know. So one of the other people who filed it, they took it a step further. So we've been just sharing our ideas on exactly what we're doing with that 1938 form. And what happened, he contacted the IRS, and none of them are filed. So they have no jurisdiction. And that's the reason of the, you know.
Wow.
So that's been really very helpful, and I had to share that. Last week, I'm sorry, I didn't even get a chance. I guess I fell asleep, you know, and I came in on the late latter part. And I said, let me call and speak.
Does that have anything? You know? Does that have anything to do with the fiduciary authority and the proof of the claim, that particular form?
I sent you the copy of it.
Yeah, you did. You did. I have it in the file, and I didn't scrutinize it, though.
Yeah, it's very powerful. And we did a cover sheet with it. And then on the back, it's all the people we CC it to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and then we send it. And, like, I may put, like, maybe five names. Sometimes on some of them might be eight names. And I write down below, CC to, you know, 20 others. And they don't have to know who we CC to do, you know.
Hmm.
But they all jumped ship and they came off the cases real quick.
Well, that's good. You may be able to beat this without having to move it into the federal court. But if you do, you know, I'm going to try to get something up soon. I mean, I just got to find a time. I have certain things I have to do first before I can do that.
Yeah,
but
I understand.
I know people, I just people have to, needed that.
Yeah, but I just wanted to share with you because I think this is very helpful, what we've been doing. You know, I'm just saying, as we've been going to the court, plugging along, as a matter of fact, normally on Mondays, the courts are packed with illegal foreclosures. The judge, this last one, this is the fourth one, she said, I see you know your way around the law library very well. I'm impressed. And she goes, but I have no jurisdiction over you. And she goes, and she was very nice, very cordial.
And this is the judge?
And this is the judge? This is the new judge, absolutely.
Well, you tell him, could you put that in writing?
Huh? Well, I got my transcript. I have my transcript. Huh? So I got it in writing. Everything I said, I got to send you the copy. Oh, this was, like, so on point in the last two transcripts, what I did, you know. Mm-hmm. And that will be very helpful to everyone also. And then two of the attorneys who I've known from the past, from the 70s and 80s, they said, you know what? You put one hell of a case together. One asked me to come work for him because I've been representing myself all this time. I just looked at him. I'm like, look, you're the ones I'm fighting against. It's taking everybody's property.
Right. Why would I help you take people's property, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just saying, but, you know, as I said, been plugging along, and I thank you for, you know, the time, because it was a group effort on what we've learned. I cannot afford no attorney, and everybody's like really baffled, like, you've been here for almost 4.5 years and you're the only one who still got their home. Everybody else
right.
lost theirs, right. You know. You know, but and another thing too, before I forget, on your response, every, right, chief, I always address it to the chief judge, and comma, ETAL. Chief clerk, comma, ETAL.
Oh, good idea.
The attorneys, their full names, comma, ETAL, because it might be more than one group. Chief state attorney, Chief Attorney General, which I told you there's 33,000 attorneys in our state. Oh, and also this bogus Social Security, which I should have been receiving my husband's Social Security since 2015, and they won't give me. And guess what I found out? Everybody definitely needs to contact their bar association or their the grievance committee and start writing grievances on these attorneys and judges, and make sure you get their juris number. Guess what I found out? The attorney, the judge that ruled on my Social Security, he was disbarred in 2007. He has no juris license to even be a judge. And he's the one who rules in my case. So I'm like, oh, so that's another big thing I got going on.
Yeah, well, bear in mind, the Social Security is administrative. You know, there's no positive law there. It's not in a federal court. And it's just a guy who claims to be a judge. You know, the first time I was in an administrative court and I didn't even belong there, I found out it was their paper tigers. They have no power, no authority. And this is a long time ago, and I didn't realize it. But they've, you know, tried to push me around, and I even raised my voice in the court a few times. I surprised myself, and nobody did anything. You know, you in a court of justice, I would have been put in jail.
Yeah, but and it's like in the federal. But he's not even he was disbarred as an attorney in 2007 in bad standing. And when I called, it was funny because I asked for, and they go, he was disbarred. He's bad, not in good standing. before I
right,
even
but he's
said
getting
that,
he's
know,
getting away with it because you don't have to be a bar attorney, you don't have to be a listed as a judge or anything to sit as a arbitrator in an administrative court. They're arbitrators.
But he wrote it
anybody,
on the paper.
Anybody
he's a judge. No, it didn't say
well,
arbitrator.
Yeah, that's interesting that they used the word judge, though. Yeah.
On my papers, it's judge.
Yeah. Well, that's a fraud, though. He's at the color of law. He's acting under the color of law, claiming credentials that he doesn't have. So that's something you could do there.
Okay. But I
okay, let me move on.
Okay.
All right, appreciate it. And you're going back tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow morning. They got me the first case.
All
right, okay.
Let us know next week, then.
Okay, we'll do.
Thanks. Okay, if anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue, we only have one other person in the queue right now. We don't have any, many people tonight. I guess the holiday, people taking off, whatever. But let's go to the next person. It's a you've been unmuted. It's 201. That's Jersey, I believe.
Yes, hello.
Yes. First name?
Hi, Benjamin.
How you doing, Ben?
Okay, I'm from New Jersey. I've been a member for a few months already, and I just wanted to tell you that in August of 17, they tried to put a guardianship on my mother. She had many psychological evaluations on her own that said she does not need a guardian. In fact, she passed many tests. And so much abuse in this case, it's mind-boggling. The court-appointed attorney came to my house with no ID. All she has was an expired ID from February of 17, and she came in October of 17, and the ID was from New York. And she, let's see, how else? They put a temporary guardian on my mother, even though she has psychological evaluations that says she doesn't need a guardian. She'll be 91 in next week. And the people in the, the court-appointed attorney, I have it in writing, where she says that she does not want to submit the psychological evaluations that said my mother does not need a guardian. She did not want to submit it to the judge back in the hearing of November.
How did this get into the court?
My brother...
And which court exactly you in?
Hudson County, New Jersey, probate.
Probate court, okay. And how did it get into the probate court?
My brother and my cousin, who's a lawyer, they got together because my mother was having very slight memory issues, and they found out, and they tried to say she's incompetent adult and tried to make themselves guardian. Well, my brother guardian and also power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So
you couldn't work that out in the family, huh? There's a rift there.
No, my cousin's a lawyer. He doesn't work things in the family. He does everything with the
law.
So a temporary guardian.
Well, how about your brother? Did he change his thinking, or is he still on the other side?
No, he's still on the other side. He said he told us he changed his thinking, but he didn't. So
But before you go on with this case, I just want to understand just a few other little things here. So you're in probate court because your brother and your cousin. The lawyer is a cousin, right?
Well, yeah.
Okay, so those two went and brought it into the probate court. Now, who was... Now, your mother's 91. Is she living on her own, or is she living with someone?
I live with her.
Okay, so you're the one that's been the caretaker to assist her.
For the last 2 years. But all I do is buy groceries and pay bills. That's it.
Well, that's fine. But you've been someone that's been sort of a payee for her, someone assisting her. You know, she's elderly. She's probably got some physical disabilities and mental disabilities to some degree as far as memory. Hey, look, I got enough memory disabilities myself that they may try to take me into probate court. But, you know, everybody forgets things and has memory problems, especially as you get older. But in any event... You've already proven the fact that she can take care of herself as far as being evaluated by some authority of some kind that the court is happy with, I presume, number one.
They're not happy with it.
Okay, but it is an authority that they have to accept, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's one thing. Now, the other thing is what involvement does your brother have with your mother? Does he do anything for her? Is he involved in her life?
No.
Okay, what about your cousin? Is he involved in her life?
Only for the negative.
Okay,
no,
so first thing I would do is make an affidavit concerning that fact, who you are, what you're doing, who they are, and what they're not doing. Okay, that's number one. Just something to think about in case you need it as ammunition. So now they've put it into the court, and they got the probate court involved, and the probate court loves to get their latches onto you, and they're coming in claiming fiduciary authority, but they don't have it. Because none of those people have a connection with your mother. You're the one that has the fiduciary authority. You've been given that fiduciary authority by your mother by her allowing you to assist and help her and participate. You need to make that point that this court has no fiduciary authority. I never gave any fiduciary authority. Where is the fiduciary authority papers that have to be filed in the local federal district court and in that court to have fiduciary authority over someone in a probate court? And also, you know, what's the claims being made? Where is the affidavits claiming, making a claim, and what is the claim? And you have the necessary papers that from some place that evaluated her and says that she's fine, she could take care of herself with a little help, and that's fine. So the court's trying to doesn't want to let the let you loose. Is that what's going on right now?
Well, they appointed their own shrinks to evaluate her, and they lied. And I've charged one with perjury because of what she said in her report, which was false. And I have proof of her lie because I took a picture of the kitchen, which she said was a total mess and dirty dishes and up and everything. And she wouldn't let me take a picture with her in it. But I took a picture in the same time period, which is on the camera, of her report. And I charged with perjury because the counter was not riddled with dishes, like she said, and dirty and all messed up.
Now, who was that other person? That person was someone hired by the court?
Yes, she was a doctor of osteopathy specializing in geriatrics. And then,
okay, and is she someone actually working for the court or just being engaged by the court for this point to make an evaluation?
I don't know what the difference would be. The court appointed, or maybe Adult Protective Services, because they got in on the act.
See, if they're connected to that, and that's another government agency, and that again, you know, look at you can't be ganging up on me, is what I'd be telling them. You know, you got to. This is a conflict of interest. The government wants something out of this. Let me ask you a question, and I'm going to make a presumption that there's an estate involved here that has some value.
You better believe it.
Yes, and that's how these things always get in. That's how they get your claws in, and you better be very careful because they're going to do everything they can to take this away from you because they love to take the money and spend it. They're going to spend it on themselves, and even your brother and cousin who may think that they're going to get something out of this, they may never get anything out of this. They just go in and destroy. It's a search and destroy issue, and it's all about money. It's RICO on steroids in these probate courts. They all need to go to jail, in my opinion. There's only one court worse than the probate courts, and that's family court. They're the most evil, in my opinion. But you've got a strong position in a case, and what I would do is make my case with some of the things I told you, the thoughts, make an affidavit, follow with the court, get a cease and desist. It's ended. It's over. We need no more evaluation. These guys have no participation with my mother. They're not doing anything to help her. They have no fiduciary authority over her. I have the fiduciary authority. I have the relationship with my mother. Get this in an affidavit. File it in the court. Tell them you want to cease and desist. You want out of there, and you want out now. If they refuse this...
Should I do it with my mother's court-appointed attorney, or should I do it myself? Not court. She has her own attorney, which she hired, and the court.
That's okay. Look at. I would... If you can discuss this with the attorney, and maybe, you know, this conversation is being taped, so you can download a copy, and you can let your attorney listen to some of the things I'm saying, and you could talk to him how you want. But the key thing is this, is you want the attorney to do the job that you're hiring him to do, so on behalf of your mother. You want these people to go away. You're not spending any more money. You don't want to spend your mother's money to pay you to continue to fight this battle for 10 years. Forget about it. We're not here for this. I want it solved and done with now. And if the court doesn't cease and desist because they have nothing to come at you with, you move it into a federal court for cause. Okay. I'm going
to
be
temporary guardian. He took $365,000 out of the bank, never told
her. Oh, yeah.
And he took her mail, never told her. She missed her wedding invitation of her grandson.
That person needs to go to jail.
I agree.
Yeah,
and
you need, and your lawyer,
fed up with this.
If your lawyer has anything, look at you. Does your lawyer is her lawyer aware of all these details?
Yes.
And he needs to do his job. Let him listen to this tape, and he, you know, and maybe tell him to come on to the program one evening. We could discuss it some further. But I'm going to be again. I got to get the time to do it. I know I have something laying around because I've done this before. I've moved cases into federal court for cause, but you have to do some homework because you need to deal with these people in the court. You need to understand the jurisdictions you're in, you know, the powers, the authorities, and to make sure you're in a proper jurisdiction, which is very difficult to get into. And but, you know, they understand certain things. One of the things they understand is, you know, they can't really be making decisions to give you any kind of remedy because they're not capable of giving you a remedy. Then that's if they're in the wrong jurisdiction. But they certainly have the power and the authority to make a ruling to throw this, acknowledge that you're not getting due process and tell the other court to cease and desist. Because that's what your wherefore clause has got to be in the federal court. Wherefore, you moving this court for these people to cease and desist. And you also want to make the response to these people, you know, you have to make certain positions in that paper. And one of the things, you know, there is no proof of any kind of a claim concerning the estate of my mother. There is no proof of fiduciary authority. I have full fiduciary authority over my mother. I'm her son. I'm the one who cares for her. I've been caring for her for years, and so on and so forth. And again, your affidavit is important to make all these points and to let it be known that these other two clowns are in it for the money. You also want to know and evaluate. We want to know where this money went to. Who was this individual that took money?
Do you want the name?
Well, if you want to give the name, that's fine.
It's Drew Bauman. He's a lawyer. He makes his living as a guardian. That's what he does.
Okay, so this guardian came in and removed $300,000. I have an account. Well, did he give any accountant what he done with this money?
Oh, he only gave it about a month ago, but he took it out in March.
And what's he doing?
Well, I don't. Who knows? You know, he never.
Yeah, well, that's
the rent.
It.
He doesn't pay the rent.
Look, I'll tell you what, you know, you got to do this very carefully. And if you got a lawyer that's got any guts to do it, and most of them don't because they're bar attorneys and they're threatened by the bar, the judge is going to look at them with a little bit of a frown and he's going to back off maybe. That's why lawyers in these kind of cases where injustice is taking place, you know, it's difficult to get anyone to work with you because they're frightened. But the bottom line is this. This judge needs to understand that he's becoming part of a fraud. There's no reason for any lawyer to take $300,000 out of an account for any purpose, for any reason. It doesn't. You tell me why. Where's the accountant on that, Judge? I want an accountant from you, Judge, and I want an accountant from him. You know, this. You have to do this in a show cause by what authority? And what did you do with this money? I want an accountant, you know? These lawyers, they drive me crazy. I did a case for someone. I did the whole case for them, and they decided to go with a lawyer. It was a divorce case. But I did all the paperwork. I got all of the necessary forms to put together. I did all the affidavits. We got all the signatures. It took a long time to bring all this information together. She decided to go with a lawyer because she got one for cheap. Well, cheap wasn't cheap at the end anyway. And then they charged all kinds of money after that. And I told her this is what happened to her. So we told the lawyer, give us an accountant. They can't give an accounting. They have no documents in order to prove or show. And they know we're looking at phone calls. We're looking at, you know, the records that we have, the phone records we have. We want to see their phone records. I mean, the whole business. They know they're being scrutinized now. Okay. Now, they normally don't get this. This is why they're used to ripping people off, and it becomes easier and easier because most people are so dumb to the process, they have no clue, and they don't even know to ask and to question and to tell me why, how. Well, you want an accountant. You need to do a show cause on that, and you need to get this court to cease and desist, and that's where you need to take it. And you need to do that quickly. You could do all of that within a month so that they have 30 days to respond and settle the matter. And if the court doesn't settle the matter appropriately, and they have no jurisdiction, no fiduciary authority. They can't give fiduciary authority. They had no power to give fiduciary authority to that, and that's a point you need to make on the record. Where is the fiduciary authority? There's two federal papers that forms that should have been filled out. And I don't know if there are any states. What state? You're in Jersey. I don't know if the state has a form, but it doesn't matter. You can use a federal form. It's called a form 4990, and the other one is form 56. One is fiduciary authority. The other is a proof of claim. Where have they been filed, Your Honor? I don't see them in the court. Can I have a copy of that? They don't exist, I'll tell you right now, because it's an affidavit. They have to swear. These people are not going to swear in a paper their crime that they're going to commit. So it doesn't exist.
Do I have to file these forms, or they?
No, they're supposed to file those forms.
Oh, they're supposed to.
In order for anyone to take fiduciary authority away from you, in order for anyone to try to make a claim against you or your mother, okay, they have to file these two papers. In the federal district is where the papers are filed on the federal level, the 4490 and Form 56. But the on the state level, there may be a form for the state, but if there's no form for the state, then it's a federal form. Give me your – I want to see your authority.
The court-appointed attorney, she had two of them by now, and they won't let her dismiss her, even though she has her own attorney – and that she chose it by herself. And did you
They're
know that
they're forcing an attorney on her?
She has her own. Yes, two of one quit, one was fired, and then they have another one. And guess what? They charge the bill for the court-appointed attorney, which they're charging my mother, is comes to about $50,000.
Yeah, denied. Look, it's all
and
a fraud.
I don't know if
committing
the Guardian paid it off. I don't know if the Guardian paid that already.
Well, it's all fraud. It doesn't matter. Look at. Just think about this. The government has come and taken control of your mother. They've appointed attorneys to do this or that. They've got the judge in there. He's making decisions. They're claiming fiduciary authority. They're making claims. They're taking money. This is what they do all day long. It's a ripoff. It's fraud. It's RICO. They need to go to jail. They need to understand that you're someone that has come, that you're not going to let this go. I'm taking this into the federal court. You cease and desist and give me an accounting of the money, how you spent it, and I better agree with it, because whatever I don't agree with, I want the rest back. There's no way you spent $50,000. That's all a lie from hell, and you know that. They know that. And you need to move it into federal court, and I would even pursue criminal charges on them.
Well, yeah, I could go on with this, but I think I could. By the way, after I talked about this psychologist that came with the dirty counter, kitchen counter, she said, I talked to her for 2 minutes, and she wrote in a report that I was abrupt, terse, and had something to the effect of forced speech, which maybe I did, I don't know, but I had no obligation to talk to her. And then she says that I need a diagnosis, and then they tried to put a guardian on me.
Oh, yeah. They don't stop.
No.
Yeah, they want to destroy you. I can tell you cases that will make your hair curl. But, I know what they do. They do it. It's RICO on steroids. These people are out of control. It's a money-making machine. They're all lining their pockets from the judge all the way down to the attorneys. They're all getting rich on this. They need to go to jail. Okay?
So you need
to get everything back, and you need it returned,
yes.
And they need to go to jail.
Oh, no, these people are vicious. But one last question. So this fiduciary form, I mean the federal form 4990 and also 56.
Yeah, 4990 and form 56.
So
I think the 56 is the fiduciary. I think the 4490 is the proof of claim. But they could be reversed. I'm not sure of the numbers. But go ahead.
Okay, so
you can find that by going into Google and put Form 4490, Form 56. They'll come right up.
Okay, thank you. So should my mother's lawyer do this, who's trying to do a good job, I think. But no,
well,
he's trying to do a good job with it.
Here's the problem. He could be a good guy, want to do the right thing, but afraid to do the right thing or unable to do the right thing because his hands are tied. You see, this is why... It's a shame because they threaten lawyers. Let me tell you, the judge will get a hold of his lawyer and say, you're not playing ball with us here. You better straighten up. You're in my courtroom. However they put it, that's the kind of stuff they'll do. And so it depends on how bold your lawyer is, how powerful he feels, how much how much he feels that he can get over on them, if anything. You know, it is a probate court. You know, again, it's not a court of record. They really don't have the power to fine or incarcerate. It is a court of law because probate is a law court. You know, it's touchy on this thing here on how they can get away with this. But the bottom line, here is the bottom line, and I would let the judge know, when's the next time you're going to court?
That's unfortunately, it's Thursday.
You want a copy of the sworn fiduciary authority papers. You want a copy of any proof of claims that they have, and you want a copy of the accounting of all the money that they taken out of your mother's account and how they spent it and where the remainder is. Okay, and you want that now. Okay, you need, if he doesn't give it to you, as a matter of fact, you say, look, I'll sit out here and wait until you guys can collect all this stuff. If I have to, I'll come back at 3 o'clock or whatever. I'll be back tomorrow morning. You don't want them to put this off because you want it now. And there's no reason. They're keeping an accounting. They should be able to get it now, even if it's 24, 48 hours. Fine.
I think my mother's lawyer got it, but he never gave it to us. But I'll beg him to give it to us.
All right. Well, look, maybe let your lawyer listen to this call, and maybe he'll get some ideas and that we're talking, what we're talking about. But I'll tell you right now, I that's why I would not, personally, me, I would not hire a lawyer to go into court for me. I might hire a lawyer to come into court with me and to sit on the side there, maybe give me some thoughts and ideas, possibly, or at least before I go into the court. I mean, that I might do. But generally speaking, I don't, and I handle my own things because they're not going to threaten me the way they threaten a bar lawyer, okay? And that's a problem, and that's why they control these courts. But if they get someone that understands what's going on, and you let them know, without these forms, there is no authority here, and I want to see them. They have to be sworn affidavits. This cannot be a form filled out by somebody without a sworn, at the end, a signature sworn on the bottom, an affidavit form. Without that, there is no fiduciary authority. They've never had fiduciary authority. And without the same thing for any claims that they've made, because they'll fill their forms out, but nobody's signature, no one will swear to it. If there ain't nobody swearing to it, then it's never happened. I want every dollar back. I want you to release. I want you to cease and desist. And then you do a show cause. And you could try going through an appellate process above them. But personally, I'm just tired of all that. It's just another problem to go from step to step. They're denying due process. They're committing fraud on the court. Fraud on the court can only be committed by an officer of the court, by the way. So, and they're all officers of the court. So they're committing fraud on the court. They have no fiduciary authority over you. They have no proof of claim over you. They have no affidavit against you. They just have no authority, and they are just committing a crime, and they're not giving you due process. Your mother's not getting due process. That is how you're moving into a federal court. In the federal court, you don't have to prove or discuss anything of these issues. The only thing you have to show or prove is that you're not getting due process. They have no affidavits. They have no proof of fiduciary authority, proof of claim. They've taken money out of account without authority. I want it all back. This is a crime. I want it back. I want this court to cease and desist. I want my money back, and I want them to leave my mother alone. And that's how I'd pursue it in the federal court. If you stay along too long in these courts, they become more and more bold, and they take more and more advantage. You gotta scare the shit out of them if you possibly can from day one. You have to get them to wonder who the hell is this guy to do things that nobody else has ever done.
So in other words, I'm not my mother's lawyer, so I don't know if I can speak.
That's another game they play. No. You are the fiduciary authority. You have fiduciary authority. In fiduciary authority, you have control of your mother and your mother's estate. You want to take it away from me? Come do due process to me and my mother. And you don't do due process to me and my mother to lawfully take this away from me for whatever reasons you think you could take it away from me, then cease and desist and get out of my face and my life, okay? Now, you know, you can't be speaking the way I'm speaking. I'm getting a little bold here. I would never talk in a court like that. But my points would be made on those lines. And again, you know, you got to let them know you're not going to take this. I don't care what everyone else is doing. We're moving to someplace else. We're going to talk to the feds. That's what we're going to do. You got to let them know that you know something and they're not sure what you know and what you don't know, okay? So look into the rules of the court on the on these courts, this probate court. Try to understand the court a little bit. They got to have rules and stuff. Read the rules, see what's going on, and push for those papers and affidavits. They don't have affidavits. They have nothing. They've just ripped you off. It's fraud.
Okay.
Okay. Even this woman that did the report, it's got to be an affidavit form. Otherwise, hearsay. It doesn't mean anything. Okay. Now, if you have any, you said that you had a report done saying that your mother was competent enough to be left alone, or you're some,
yeah,
by some
three reports, and also a letter from the neurologist that she can make her own decisions for the good.
Okay. Are they affidavit signed, or can you get them to sign it under affidavit? In other words, what they put on paper, you take the report, okay, and you take it down to the doctor or the whatever, you know, the agency or whatever it is that did the report on it, and ask them, can you swear that this is true? And you can kind of go and get the necessary paperwork to add to make it an affidavit, and, you know, that this form that's attached here and is so on and so forth true, blah, 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 and have them sign it in front of a notary. You see, once they do that, now it's not hearsay. It is a fact of the court unless it's rebutted. An affidavit unrebutted is rules the court. Period. Nothing else to talk about. Okay. So if they don't rebut it, it rules the court. And if they don't have anything, they have nothing, and they've been stealing.
Should I let them know that it could go to federal court Thursday?
First, I would ask for these things. That should shake them up a bit.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't want to get too much away. I understand.
Yeah.
That seems like
I would move a little slowly on this, but I wouldn't stick around too long. A month or so, I'd be out of that court. But you do want to make the – first of all, you want to get evidence. You want to get paperwork. Because let me tell you something. When they can't produce this paper, okay, and you do a show cause, okay, and they still don't produce those papers, all right, you got all the evidence you need to shut them down. And it's fraud. You've proven fraud right there. They don't have it. They should want to get rid of you quickly because you're asking too many questions. You're digging in places that they don't want uncovered.
I suppose they just won't let me talk. So they'll say you're not allowed to talk. You're not. You know, they could say that.
Well, they could. Well, again, I don't know that they can because you are the fiduciary authority. You have the fiduciary authority over your mother. You know.
You've been
caring for her. These people come and sticking their nose in all of a sudden, and you have no authority here. I'm the fiduciary authority. Now, they can argue and still shut you down, and that's when you move to the federal court for cause, okay? And you move it to the federal court with both your name and your mother's name, and you have a paper written up that she has given you the authority, the fiduciary authority over her on her behalf to assist her in any way that she needs, you know? And, you know, that's the route you got to go. But I would get it out real quick. But they have to – well, why don't you get your mother's lawyer to get these papers, to require these papers? Let me tell you this. Get this audio that we're doing right now. Download it. Get this piece, this area that we're talking, and listen to it again. Make some notes. If you want, share it with your lawyer. And then move towards the court to get these papers. If they refuse to give it to you, you know, you have to do it maybe in a show cause. Your lawyer should be able to do it for you. Your mother should be able, if she's got a lawyer, let him to do it. You let the lawyer know that I got the fiduciary authority over my mother. That she has given it to me because I take care of her, I help her, and I try to do her will in all things possible. That's it. And your lawyer should have some appreciation of that, and he shouldn't have to get too involved in that courtroom other than to move that court for papers. I want the proof. I want the accounting. I want the all of the affidavits. Where's the authorities? I want it all.
Oh, great. Okay? It sounds good because I must have a list of 50. My mother's lawyer was thinking about taking it to the federal court. He wrote a list of like 30 violations, and I have like 20 violations of so many things they did throughout this thing. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. But remember, when you get into the federal court, the only argument is the argument of the fact that you haven't been given due process. All these things collectively prove that, but they can't prove that they have. You have not been given due process. They've given no authorities. Everything they've done was fraudulent. You want them to cease and desist, and you want them to return the funds back to your mother's estate, period. End of subject. Leave me alone. And then you could sue and get restitution for the damages they've done and all of the damage. And your lawyer should be able to take that case on and have a lot of fun with it and make some money.
I just wanted to – I heard that when guardianship case is going to federal court, I heard – someone told me, a few people told me that the federal courts really don't like to take guardianship cases.
They won't. No, they won't. But it's a due process case is what it is. It's RICO, as a matter of fact, and that's a federal that's under the federal court's jurisdiction, RICO.
Oh, I see.
Okay? But I wouldn't chase it for RICO. I chase it for due process. You want them to cease and desist. Your wherefore clause at the end has to be cease and desist and return all the funds that you robbed from my mother's estate. Okay? Your lawyer should be able to produce that with a few papers and filings and not even have to go into the court. And if they don't produce it, then you've got the proof. I mean, he should know what to do at that point. He should be able to file a show cause and for them to actually produce these papers. If they default and they don't have it, that's enough to move it into the federal court for cease and desist for due process violation. Yeah, you always has to be, when you go into a federal court, they have to have jurisdiction. And jurisdiction is established in Article 3. Read Article 3 in the Constitution. It gives them the authority and the jurisdiction that they have. And anything that falls under the umbrella of the Constitution is the jurisdiction of the federal court. The Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution. A violation of my right of due process is a federal issue. They have to decide. Now, you can move a lower court to honor that and realize that they need to obey the law and order the lower court to obey the law also. But they don't have the power or authority to make a decision beyond the fact of ordering the other court to obey the law. And if they move in a different direction and try to tell you they don't have to obey the law, then they become partners in crime with them and you go after both of them. But I wouldn't waste my time personally because these courts are destructive. They absorb the money quickly. They destroy everything in their and leave nothing but destruction in their wake. Nothing but destruction. They're evil SOBs.
I agree. I wanted to say, in case anybody, advice for other people, because I did a wise move. Otherwise, my mother being in a nursing home, not doing well on psychiatric drugs, raiding her funds.
Right.
So
right.
What I did was someone told me, get your name on your mother's bank accounts.
Because
she has other bank accounts because they were going to take everything. She wouldn't be able to hire
her own lawyer. Is she good for that?
Well, I did that. Otherwise, that's how she pays her lawyer.
Oh, great. Good for you.
But people should know that if anybody tries to get your name on your parents' account right away, because they'll take it if you don't get
it
done.
Well, that's a very good move, and that's an idea I'll suggest to people in the future that have something similar to you. But look, I got to move on to the next caller, but I'm very interested in hearing how things go. So whenever you get some new news, please bring it back to us and share it with us. And again, you know, get your lawyer to assist you here. And some of the things I've spoken to you about here, let him listen to it and let him, you know, give an opinion what he thinks. And you got to do something. You can't sit on your hands here and you can't wait. And you got to let him know. You got to be straight with the lawyer. I'm not here to dilly dally. I'm not here for you to absorb money out of my mother's accounts here. I want you to go in and do a job and move on. I want solutions. I'm not going to fight this in this court no more. These people are evil. They're guilty of RICO. They're not giving me due process. They have no authority, no power, and that's what I want to establish. I want to move it over and get everything back from these people. And then we may sue them for restitution, for damages. Okay? That's where the lawyer, you could say, that's where you can make your money. Okay? You can get a third, and personally, I would negotiate down to 25%. 25% is sufficient for a lawyer. They don't need a third. And if you got a good case, they'll take it for 25%. But, you know, if you have to pay a third, that's fine, too. You know, if you really do, because you're not going to put any more money out of your pocket. You're going to save your mother, get her out of there, and now you're going to pursue against these people. And I would even go and try to, this is a difficult one, if you can get to talk to the grand jury, go in and get audience to the grand jury, which you doubt you give it to you. But if you can get it, you can go in there and ask for an indictment against this person. Anyone can ask the grand jury for an indictment and say, this is the damages they've done. This is a this is a criminal action upon me. And if you produce it to the grand jury, they may agree with you and make an indictment. And in the indictment, participate in your case and say, wait, we're looking for restitution here, okay? There's damages. I'm not just looking for people to go to jail. I'm not asking for anyone to jail. These people need to pay for the damages that they've done to my mother and to me. And that's the pursuit. I push it. I mean, not that they understand that thinking, but that's the thinking we need. We the people need to start pushing in these courts, and hopefully our case will bring it back to this kind of a, you know, perspective. But anyway, I got to move on and do call back again, and you know, give us some more info on this one. I appreciate
Thank you.
And what was your name? Your first name again?
Benjamin.
Benjamin Ben from New Jersey. Okay, thanks, Benjamin. Okay, let's take our next caller here, another Jersey, 973, New Jersey.
Yeah. Hi, John. It's Terry.
Right? Right?
What this guy was talking about is so familiar to me because, I went through very similar bullshit with my father's estate. And these people are a bunch of racketeers. You gotta get that equity. Great advice, because they will just close ranks to protect each other, even if
you go
to appeal, which is what I did. And I actually filed a petition with the Supreme Court, and it didn't matter, you know. So
they're all working together.
Absolutely. So, he needs to be aware of that, and he's probably not going to get any traction at the state level. And I would love to discuss this with him because I'm very familiar with what they're doing with him. Because, for example, in my case, I had false criminal allegations filed against me. And they use that as an excuse to remove me as executor, even though there's case law. And New Jersey rules are against that. For example, I had six siblings. Not only did they remove me as co-executor, they removed my sister, and then they appointed the former president of Bergen County Bar Association, where the property was located. And so he comes in there and started milking the estate, and that's what they do,
That's right. Yeah.
So. I'd like him to
they
give
never
me a
make
call
any decision that is benefit towards the parent, the person that's in view to the court here. But okay, Ben, why don't you give Ben your email address and you can he can email you his phone number to you. I don't want to just give it to you. Do you want to give your email address, Terry?
Yeah, he can send it to appraisaloffice@optonline.net. That's optonline.net. And he can
and
also look me up under the courtroom.
Appraisal
What's that?
Office. That was appraisal
office.
At opt.
At. Yeah, opt online. O is in Oscar, P is in Peter, T is in Tom,
online.net.
And he can also look me up under the courtroom observers committee under,
Okay.
For Terry.
Yeah, that's Terry with the Courtroom Observers Committee. You can find the committees over on the nationallibertyalliance.org, Ben. And why don't you send Terry an email with your phone number, and you two guys should talk because it sounds like he's got some good information for you, Ben, because he's been down this road before, so he may know some of the ploys and some of the games they play. Yeah, these people are so evil. I have never heard of a good case in these courts. This in the family courts, I'd like to, they need to go. They need to go. It's horrible. It's a horror show. The groups of people like grand juries or something coming in and helping and assisting people, I don't know, they need to change this whole thing, because putting a bar attorney judge into a family court or into a probate court is just like bringing gasoline to a fire. It just is insane. They never, there's nothing good ever comes of it.
They will do anything they have to do to get control of his mother's estate or whatever, you know, that they're going after. And it doesn't matter. They don't follow the law. They don't follow the rules. And what they do, even if you go up to another court, you kick it up to another court, they'll just rubber stamp it, and, you know, your goose is cooked. So I yield on that note. You know, I'd love to hear from this guy, Benjamin.
All right, Ben. Ben, send him an email, and again, you can find him. It's Terry under the you'll find him under the committees. Which committee was that? The courtroom observer.
Courtroom observers.
Yeah, the courtroom observer committee, and or you can call Jan. Jan's number is under the directory. He's towards the top. He's the national leader. He can connect you with Terry also. Okay, with that, I see Brent is here. Brent, do you want to talk for a while? And Gerard, do you want to take the board?
John, can you hear me good?
I can hear you good, Brent.
I'm happy
to
listen.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I'm traveling, and I'm listening to try to stay awake, and I'm not able to speak.
Okay, all right, that's good.
So
we'll bore you
it.
Instead.
Pardon?
We'll bore you instead.
Oh no, I'm listening. It's helping me. Anyway,
okay, what
thanks,
I'm going to do then, I appreciate it. All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to move the board over to Gerard. You can take control of the board. You can click the next question when you're ready. It's Linda from Virginia is coming up. There's two people in the queue. Anybody else who wants to get into the queue, star six, I'm going to run silent for a while, and you got it, Gerard. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. I hope everybody can hear me. Okay, so next question is Linda from Virginia. Go ahead, Linda.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay.
Well, what are you eating? Are you eating the musketeer over there, or what are you eating there, Gerard?
That's called mic interference. Just go ahead.
Good.
I have a new phone, so bear with me. I don't really have anything, but I called in when I heard Crystal, and it all kind of runs together, but that was outstanding, by the way, the talk about the probate thing. The one thing I wanted to say is I think Crystal really has something with the fact that she got that paper or the order or whatever, and it was signed by the clerk and not a judge. And people really need to learn to question everything, you know, because that's how they are doing this. There's no due process. And then, you know, these people are paid big money, and the reason is to take responsibility, you know, and they don't. They pass it off to some little clerk, and then what happens then is there's no redress. You know, you can't go back to the person who really has responsibility because they didn't sign up to it, and that's what's happening with these ivory tower governments. You know, they're not stepping up to the plate and signing even the things that they're supposed to sign. It's all of this escape liability thing, and it's just ridiculous.
Well, they're always looking to steal something, and there's a lot of, the clerk is actually more powerful than you think they are, and the judge a lot of times, you know, they don't usually defer to a clerk. But I could see where he would do that if he didn't want his signature on something. You know, I mean, there are certain things that at the end that the clerk can sign. You know, they have a power to sign certain orders and things like that. So if the clerk is signing something, You got to ask, what are they signing and where are you at? Is it, was it even legal that they signed that? And a lot of times it is, and that's why they do it, because I think some of these clerks are not educated to the law, you know?
Well, I realize that the clerk has a lot of power. I understand that. But in her case, I think she was talking about something that said they were going to proceed to foreclosure on her house. And, you know, for a clerk to sign something like that, that's ridiculous. That needs to be a judge's decision, you know, like a judge's signature. So, but I'm just saying, you know, pretty much across the board, they just don't, you know, step up to the plate and put their signature on anything. So then when you, you know, find out or discover that things have been done deceptively or whatever, then there's no one to go after because you've had these low-level employees signing things. So it's just an observation, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think the court's still liable. I don't care who signed it. It doesn't matter. The court's the court, and you know what I mean? And if there was a judge on that case, then he's liable. What's he doing letting the clerk sign it? I mean, you can't say that we can't go back to the original case because this person's low level. I mean, if he's allowing that, look, they're taking the path of the most money for themselves and least resistance. I don't think that they're incompetent. I think that they're crazy like a fox.
Right.
They're making money. And the reason people aren't stepping up is because they're all making money and they all got the goods on everybody else. And the first guy won't step up because the next guy's got something on him and it all rolls downhill. And that's the way the system's been run for years and years and years. The corruption is so deep. It's going to be very hard to change this. And that's the good thing about Trump coming in and maybe even with the military. Look at this country can go into chaos and, you know, the military and the executive branch could take over the federal government. And if that happens, our government moves down to the state level. Imagine what kind of chaos. You're dealing with state level guys here doing all this garbage. They're no better than the federal guys. And we're going to kind of be on our own if the country's in a state of, you know, panic or emergency.
Yeah, I'd like to pipe in there because I know there's a lot of talk about, what do you call it, martial law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, martial law is only for a captive nation. That would require Donald Trump to give up power and give it over to the generals to have martial law in America, and he'll never do that. There's no way he would stop being, you know, commander in chief. He would take care of things. We're not a captive nation. He'd be protecting us by taking control and moving, and we would hope that he'd be moving really with the. With the militia and not with the military on U.S. grounds, you know. Although if it's necessary, it's necessary. But I know a lot of people are out there talking about martial law. I have no idea how that could possibly happen in America other than if Hillary Clinton or others were in charge and tried to pull it against us from the other perspective.
Well,
so
he has us under a state
yes.
of emergency, which allows
but
him
he's
to
not
going to
bring
things.
In martial law.
No. He doesn't have to bring in martial law. He's going to use the military to arrest these people.
I can understand that, but what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of people out there fearing the people about martial law coming to America. Donald Trump will never allow that to happen.
Well, that gives some peace of mind, but I know there are several movements about the states taking back their power, and that needs to happen in some, you know, instances, but I have the same feeling that the states are no better, you know.
Well, look,
really.
The states are no better to some degree, but I want to tell you there are some states and sometimes there's a good governor and there's sometimes good things can happen. And, you know, we've already sent papers to every governor in the United States. We sent an information to them concerning the Senate, okay? They have power of nullification. They can nullify the senators going in and tell them cease and desist. Don't think your senators no more because that's unconstitutional, and that takes away from us our right to a vote. Okay, it's an Article 5 of the Constitution, where it talks about the right of the state, okay, to have a vote in the Senate, and so the governor can appoint two senators, send them up to their you know, up to their legislators in their state for approval, and then send them out to Washington, fire the other clowns that are in there that have been, that are not lawful. 17th Amendment was unlawful. There was two other places in the Constitution that they never adjusted in order to make that law to begin with, number one. Number two, it upset the entire balance of power. Number three, it took away the sovereignty of a state, the clipped sovereignty of a state. And also the 17th Amendment was never ratified. And we've got those papers up on our site. We're going to be producing that to the court also to show the votes that took place concerning the ratification, and it didn't happen. But more than that, you cannot tell the state right now is states are not sovereign. They have no say to whatever anything that happens in Congress, in the federal government. They have no say towards legislation, representation, nothing. So there's no representation to the states. Now, the state governors should know this. We've sent them an information, and they've chosen not to exercise their power of nullification, or maybe not to read what we sent them, or not take us serious. Maybe they sent it to a lawyer for advice, and the lawyer said, these guys are crazy, don't worry about it. And, well, woe is them. Shame on them.
And nullification, for my benefit and anybody else, I guess, is anything that's not in line with the Constitution is void. Is that the...
That's right. Marbury versus okay. Madison.
Okay.
And look at, you know, even if you just think the law is unjust, you nullify it, okay? Now, remember, in a court of law, you know, I'm talking about a court of justice, okay, one under natural law, statutes don't play a place. They don't play anything in the courts. But in a court of law, under a USC title, where maybe there's a jury involved, and the jury can nullify the law. The law could say there's a requirement of 2 years in jail and a fine of $100,000, you know. And the jury can say, we disagree. We don't think there should be any jail time. And you know what? There shouldn't be any fine either. But this is what we think should happen. And they can lay out what they think should happen. And that is the power and authority of a jury, even inside a statutory court.
Yeah,
it's the power of nullification.
I just posted a statement about our justice system, how, you know, we have these pass-through courts, and you go from appeal to appeal, and, you know, that basically drains whatever resources you have. And then you end up at the Supreme Court, who simply decides not to hear the case. Most cases, they won't even hear.
Well, they can't hear. There's too many cases to begin with, number one. Number two, we've allowed these people to open what's called courts of equity, where judges come and make decisions. We got to deny that. We also, and again, it's very difficult to maintain a jurisdiction, and it's, you know, you really got to understand the jurisdictions that they're playing in and how they move to a jurisdiction, and every once in a while maybe even ask the judge, hey, by the way, what jurisdiction are we in right now, if you're in a federal court anyway, you know, because they have to tell you what jurisdiction you're in, you know, in order to have, you know, authority or subject matter authority, and also to have authority over you. You know, you got to be careful, and you have to make sure that you let them know what the jurisdiction is. And that's the uphill battle we're fighting. They have hidden courts of justice from us. They have robbed us. They have given us no way to access courts of justice. You can't get natural law applied. If you talk about common law, they say, oh, yeah, you can, you know, that's federal court decisions, you know. No, that's not what common law is. It's not a collection of federal district court decisions. It's not what the common law is at all. And United States Supreme Court decisions ultimately make up, as long as it's not repugnant to the Constitution, as far as the appellate courts, you know, the appeal system is concerned, and the United States Supreme Court, that does make up American jurisprudence and should be in line with it. And if it's not, then it too is null and void. It's repugnant if it denies anything in our Constitution, particularly in our Bill of Rights. You know, it is an uphill battle, and it's tough, and you got to keep your eyes open when you're in there.
The other thing is that the talk about the probate courts is, I'm extremely concerned about that. There's a case here in Virginia where a lawyer was representing a client, and they went after her. They went after the lawyer and took her bar license for no reason. You know, she's been...
They're vultures. That's exactly what they do. They're vultures. That's why we talked to that other guy, Ben, and told him, you know, his lawyer may not want to participate because it could be a problem. But if he could file a few papers requiring certain things and kind of not go into the court, he could probably get away with it. But he might get a phone call from the judge or somebody. You know, I don't know.
But see, that brings it back full circle to what I said about accountability. That's what you have to do. The problem is people don't know the papers to file, but still, you know, that was excellent what you told him, because what that's going to do is make them step up to the plate, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's what's not, that's how they get away with this. You know, they're just able to do it with, like, smoke and mirrors, and it's ridiculous.
If a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. They expect what never was and never will be. And, of course, that's Jefferson. So, look, at people need to bone up on this stuff. Even if you don't think, I don't need that, I'm not in court. Well, believe me, tomorrow you might be. Next week or next month. Okay.
Oh, that's why I'm saying this, because I'm in my 60s, so, and they've already tried, you know, I had the code enforcement case, and I feel like they've already tried to, you know.
Push you around.
Yeah, right. Let's just say that.
Yeah. I know. These people are so evil. They're so evil. You know, look, at when they haven't got the memo yet. Okay, they haven't got the memo yet. They're so lost in their money games and their power and their authority and their evil activities, and lost in their own little worlds and enjoying the fruits of their evil labor. They're not really paying too much attention or close enough attention that the game is up. Everybody's, a lot of people about ready to go to jail. Deep state is about to be just taken down and shut down. There's some big, big things happening very soon. I'm sure most of the people listening in know this. And there's big, big things happening, and when that happens, these people are going to be hitting brick walls and realize, wow, I'm in trouble. We need to wake them up and let them know now, get off my case, because you're about to be closed down. You're about to go to jail over this stuff.
It would be good if it all catches up.
It's going to catch up. I believe it. And that's why the work we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance is so important. People need to get on board, get educated, get behind us, get this critical mass going by joining forces with us and pushing this thing into the courts to take it back. We need to take back our courts. If we can't take control of our courts of justice, then we have no control over our destiny at all. And if we don't step up to do it, I'm telling you, we can do it. Everything you need to know is on National Liberty Alliance. We're putting together another course soon. Our cases will educate you. And all of that is available for the people to take power, to take consent of their government. And now that you know, if you don't do it and you don't educate, well, shame on you and woe to you. You're going to suffer the consequences. And your children will too.
Yeah. Okay, well, like I said, I really didn't have anything other than just comments. So my case is going okay, and I have an inspection coming up and hope to get through that. So been a little busy with that. So.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay.
Let me pass it back to Gerard. I just wanted to jump in on this thing because I heard about the martial law thing, and I don't know whether you understood that it's not going to happen or not, or if anyone realizes. People are fear-mongering. They're just trying to get power and a moment of something, you know, whatever, on YouTube and all that stuff. It's not going to happen. You know, this president will never pass over his authority to some general. It'll never happen.
Well, with some of the stuff we have going on, though, with the police and the, you know, the abuse or whatever that's happening in some cases, you do wonder if we're already having martial law, you know?
No, we're not going to be. And I'll tell you, look at the generals around Trump, Okay, they're working with him. They know it's too dangerous for them to take power and control. It's just too dangerous. They would. This country would be blown apart. I'd even be questioning what the hell's going on if Trump lost power. I'd be concerned, you know. So, and I'm sure most people will. And we're supposed to know what's going on. It's not going to happen. And so we don't really have to worry about that. And Trump knows. The generals know they're not going to do it. And Trump knows that he can't do it. He's the guy, you know, he's in charge of this nation and responsible for the safety of the people, the borders, and to protect the people from enemies, both foreign and domestic. And whatever he has to do to protect those people, that's us, he's going to do it. And he's not going to give away his power as chief, you know, to some general. It'd be crazy.
No, that would be unlawful. That would
be a coup,
and that's what they were talking about, and that's why they got him to run, because they didn't want to do that. But
that's
that
right.
doesn't mean that we can't have a civil war. You got all these entitlement people that want their entitlements, and when that goes down, they're going to hit the streets. And Donald Trump is not going to keep it together on his own, and there will be military out there. It may not be martial law, but it'll be like a civil war. There's going to be a fractional government.
Yeah, he'll probably do curfews and different things. And whatever.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I understand. And probably
so
just the cities, too.
Look, the level of government always reverts to the county level, the state and then the county. But like
right.
you said, John, that in a certain sense, that makes things easier because you have more control over them than you do the federal government. The people
right.
of a state can control their state better than they can control the federal. And you certainly can control your county if you get involved. So if we get down
right.
to a point where there's chaos in our counties, you want to make sure that you go down there and your public officials are doing the right thing, that's all. And if they're not, you should step up to the plate and run yourself, you know. But I don't know. It depends. You know, we got a money thing going on, and we got a lot of stuff going on. So only God knows where that's going to go. But we don't want martial law because that's a military government, and we don't really have control over that at that point. And like you said, Trump is not going to let that happen. I think what will happen is you will, if it gets that bad, and then it'll have to be a militia action, which is more like a civil war type thing.
Look, we're going to have unrest. There's no doubt about it. But the unrest, I think, is going to be minimum to begin with. These people, these radicals, first of all, are paid radicals. Okay, they have no problem being radicals because they like the money. And that's limited to begin with. And let me tell you, once the mass arrests start happening, and they could be happening as we speak right now, and I don't know if anybody's seen the list of all the CEOs of all these corporations across, I mean, the list goes on and on and on, all these people resigning and stuff, some of them being indicted. But, once these indictments go and the mass arrest takes place, I think it's going to happen very quickly. They're going to move masses. They're going to use the military to do it. I guess they have no choice on that. And, of course, the local law enforcement, he's out talking to all the local law enforcement. Look what he's doing. And this is going to happen very quickly. And they'll lose their leadership because once the heads are taken, the rest of the snake is dead. And, you'll get some rattlers here and there trying to make havoc, and that'll be suppressed. And I think it'll go very quickly because people really don't really want unrest. They want things to be fixed. And the radicals, once the head is gone, they won't even know what to do. They're not organized anymore.
The military is really not trained to deal with civilian people, I don't think. So
no,
that would
I don't
be,
think so either. But for the mass arrests, they may be necessary for the manpower. Okay. But you know what? They can work with sheriffs. They can work with chief police. They can work with all kinds of different, police forces out there. And, I believe Trump's got a plan. There's no doubt about him having a plan. And it's not just him because he can't do this on his own. Without backing of a huge force behind him, he could not have accomplished what he's accomplished. He's got the total force of the United States Armed Forces. That's what he's got. And there may be some radicals that have broken away here or there, doing different crazy things, and some CIA agents and FBI agents. But generally speaking, he's got most of the FBI with him. He's got most of the CIA with him. He's got the force of the United States Armed Forces with him. And he's also working and with all of these different police forces. You know, look at today, he was talking with, I think it was police chiefs. He's done the border control. He did things with sheriffs. He's out there. He's got a plan.
But I was just listening to a program recently where they were talking about how, you know, there's still some old school law enforcement around who try to defuse the situation. Mm-hmm. But he said, but for the most part, he said, these guys now are being trained. They don't defuse situations. They escalate them, you know. And it was talking about how they're being trained. It's how they're being trained. So I don't know.
Well, look, all I can say is they got to keep food on the shelves. If food goes off the shelves, and we've seen this in Greece, and we've seen it in Argentina and Venezuela, when the money goes down, he has to have a plan to keep the money going. If that goes down, even your local police force is going to be a pain, because they're going to be put in curfews. They're going to be as bad as the military is the point. So
yeah.
When you have civil unrest and you have chaos and you have anarchy, you know, those are tough things. And if you're living in a city, you're in trouble. I wouldn't want to be in this city. I'm sorry. So I hope that Trump can hold it together. But, you know, he's not all powerful. If he does 50,000 arrests, think about it. That's a big vacuum in the federal government system that somebody has to go into. And really, we need to fill that from down here. How that's going to get accomplished, it's not going to get accomplished overnight. I don't know. I mean, these things are like the Wicked Witch says, these things have to be done carefully. He's got to keep a money system going. And I know that he's talking about taking their assets, but how fast can he turn those assets into money that comes into our hands? I mean, if you're holding anybody holding gold or silver, silver's going to go up, I think, 1,000 times more than gold.
Oh,
we're
yeah,
gonna get back,
absolutely.
We're going to get back on a silver. People will
it's
learn
already,
the value.
It's already down. It's got to go minimum 80-1 to gold just to catch up with gold. But it's also, they don't have enough silver really. There's silver. There's plenty of silver to some degree, but it's not. They don't really have enough for the industry and so on. So yeah, that could raise silver literally above the gold. An ounce of silver.
Yeah, because look at all the gold that's ever been mined is still around. Not the silver. Silver gets used up and doesn't get reclaimed because sometimes it's impossible. So it's silver's in a good position if you got it. I mean, I don't know if you can still get it. But yeah. They'll probably drive the price down to $4 an ounce before it bounces up. But, you know, when it's down at $4 an ounce, I'll bet you can't find it anywhere because central governments like Russia, China, they're grabbing up all they can right now. They know what's going to happen.
Oh, they have been for years.
Yeah.
Well, don't think that Trump hasn't.
Don't forget, China's not our friend. China is a communist country, and they are committed for our downfall. So as much as you think that they're getting along with China, you know, Pelosi had a Chinese guy driving her around. Clinton got most of her money through the Chinese. They've been undermining this country for many, many years. And that was their plan, to turn us into a communist country. And I guarantee you that China would have run things. Russia, I don't believe so, because I think Russia's been taking a beating and they've been under the economic hitman. And I think that Putin has an idea about what a godly system is, and I think he wants to get back to something like that. You know what I mean? He yearns for the days of the Tsar and those type of things. So there's some chance there with Russia, but China, I don't know about China. Look, we hit China pretty good ourselves. We gave them a lot of bad debt. We bundled up a lot of stuff.
Well, Steele said that Russia's always been our friend, really.
Russia's what?
Steele, that CIA guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Steele. He says that Russia really has always been our friend. He said they've always worked with us. World War I, World War II. Even after that, even though we went through the Cold War, there was a, you know, games going on. But yeah, now, you know, that's who they're trying to make us go to war with, and have been for 30 years or more.
Yeah, so we can destroy each other, and they can take over when we're done killing each
other, right? China will do it then.
But look, everybody has to pray now, because this is.
Hey, you got a few more callers out there, by the way. So.
Oh. Okay,
yeah,
I yield. I'm done.
Okay. Anyway, okay. I didn't want to get in a big discussion, but I saw some stuff there that they, you know, they're talking about more local unrest stuff, and so you just have to be aware. Let me see. I lost my screen. Where are we? Okay, let's get to the next person here before we run out of time. And that looks like, is it Maria? I don't have my glasses on here. Wisconsin? You've been unmuted.
Yes, I wanted to speak to the issue of guardianship abuse that Benjamin was talking about. There's an organization called Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship, AAAPG, and it's free, and they have an internet group called Probate Warriors, so you can ask questions that are very specific to what's going on with guardianship, and you can get answers. I don't know if you're going to get legal help from the viewpoint of a lawyer or anything like that, because they're not really into that business.
Yeah, repeat that contact information again. That's interesting.
Yes, it's Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. That's AAAPG. The founder of that organization is Dr. Sam Sugar, and he has just published a book, and the book is the Guardianship, the Perfect Crime. Another book that's out there is by M. Larson, and it's called Guardianship Fraud. And then there is an organization out there that is to stop guardianship abuse, the NSAIG or something like that, the National Association to Stop Guardianship Abuse. And they post all the people that are in guardianship abuse. This is a national crisis within all of the states, and all of the states regulate their own laws, and they walk into, like in his situation, his mother is competent, but oftentimes they walk into a place where we don't know if the person is really competent or not competent. Then they drug the person, they come in with doctors, give them competency tests, and they obviously fail because they're drugged, and then they get the money. We are going to take every senior citizen in the United States, give them a guardianship, and rob them of their estates. This is what is happening throughout this country. No, it's not called RICO. RICO failed. The NSAID.
Oh no, what I'm saying it is. What do you call it? It's fraud, and it is RICO. It's what RICO. What represents RICO? Well, RICO is to represent. But you know, with what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, and you know, building up, you know, administrations for the grand juries and the petit juries in every county across this nation. Once that happens and we train the people to orientate the juries and bring things to order, those four administrators, we're going to even talk to them about this over time, should go spend some time sitting in probate courts and start bringing these, what's going on in these courts, to the grand jury for potential indictments, and go after these judges, go after these lawyers and all these people, these fat cats making money off
okay,
of the...
Okay, your argument of getting into a probate court and sitting there isn't going to work because they have them as closed hearings. They
well,
have this
that,
whole
you
thing
got a point there. You may have a point there, and I won't argue with that, but I'll bet you dollars to donuts the power and the authority of the people to come in as the peace between the people and being the grand jury. Okay, we have the authority to go into any government office to sit in to listen to anything. And if we think that the law is being broken, we have the power and authority to go sit in that court and see what's going on. No matter what they say, they can't kick us out. And if they did try to kick us out, then we'll pull them in before the grand jury and start quizzing them there. And we'll talk
all
to
right.
the people
now,
that are being destroyed
and
injured.
You can Google how much money is made off of these guardianship accounts. It's out there. We're talking millions, if not billions of dollars all over the United States. If you want to focus on some area where there's a tremendous amount of criminal offenses, all you have to do, and due process of law, oh my goodness sakes, they take people out of their homes.
Yes,
they knock on the doors and they say, okay, you're going over here and you're going to do this over here, and you can't touch them as I had the power of attorney for my mother's health care system. What they do is they target the caregiver. I lived with my mother for 13 years and took care of her. She's 100 years old. She takes no medications and she's competent. Didn't matter. I lost. They took over my home. They threw me out on the street. They stole my car. Then I drove my mother's car. Then they told me I had to give my mother's car back to them. I was made homeless.
They're so evil. They're so
you
evil.
Can't? Oh, yeah. And there's a symposium in Florida. Look, I joined all of these groups. I read all of these books. I filed 3 writs of habeas corpus. The first one I did with you and Linda Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't get anywhere with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, they're evil because we don't have courts of justice. But I want to tell you
absolutely. We don't have courts of justice. So no matter what you do within this playing field of lie, cheat, and steal and lawyer up. I had 3 lawyers. You know, that's all we're doing.
A couple of things, though. You see, if you can pull it into federal court, like the advice I'd given to that individual, Ben, and you pull it into federal court, if you can get a good grip and an understanding of the game they're playing, the authority that they don't have, the proof of authority that they don't have, and you lay that out in their court and you bring it into the federal court, you start to make them worried. Now, the federal judge, he really doesn't want to get involved.
Because you said that with the writ of habeas corpus, and you said to go to the highest federal judge.
That's
I understand what you're saying, and your ideas are good.
But we've only had two habeas corpuses that were successful out of what, 30 or some that we've put out. Hopefully, we'll get more successful as the pressure comes upon the deep state and the memos go out to these people that are doing all these evil deeds.
This is my point. You educated me. Thank you very much. Linda Palmer was excellent. Okay, I got an education on how to write the writ of habeas corpus detail by detail by detail. I took that to a federal court, and the federal court said I didn't have jurisdiction. And the
I understand that.
I don't understand that because it's not true. I do have jurisdiction. Okay, I truly do because...
No, my point, I don't know whether did they say they didn't have jurisdiction or you didn't have jurisdiction.
The court, the judge didn't have jurisdiction. I was at the federal court.
That's right. If it's not couched correctly, number one, okay? Number two, they go through an approval thing, okay? And that's something that they shouldn't do, but since they're doing that, the grand jury has the power and the authority to give the approval. In other words, you petition the grand jury for a writ of habeas corpus, the grand jury then acknowledges and gives the writ of habeas corpus and files it into the court for execution. And that's the process that we were doing. Now, that was a lawful process. It's a legal process. It's lawful. But they don't like the idea of people taking control. They're so statutory. They're set up in such statutory processes that, you know, wait a second. Where's the statute for you doing it? Well, we don't need it. We're the people. Now we have to educate them. But you see, you're right. The problem is there's a couple of things you got to do. If you can get the judge to worry about risk, that he's in jeopardy, you can get him to do what you want. And that's one of the things you need to do. That's number one. The other way to do it, of course, is really to get courts of justice back. And that's what this court case is about now that we're getting ready to file, because this is the court case that's the pinnacle of cases of what we're doing here, what we're all about, and where we really want to get to. And that is to expose to all of the judiciary, the United States Supreme Court, both the houses, the judiciary committees of both houses, also the Justice Department and the President of the United States, collectively all together, getting the President and the Justice Department, particularly, we may even sue the Justice Department, but to get them to collectively at least to look at it through an information, okay, and put it into the courts, get the people behind it, because they have robbed us and concealed courts of justice from us. There is no court that runs under the law of nature anywhere in the United States of America. And I have not found one. If there is one, I haven't seen it. They're not permitting it. Everything is statutory. And that's the case we have to make. But the people have a problem understanding natural law. They have a problem understanding. They need to get educated. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they're going to remain ignorant, and they're not going to be free at all. They expect what never was and never will be. So it's all about education. The people have to get educated. We have to take control, and we have to move this forward. No court's going to move it. They're going to squash it. They're going to throw it out. We the people can't let that happen, and we need to pressure them. It's got to be the court of public opinion, because this is the people's court, not their court. And that's what the people need to learn. They don't understand that. And until they understand that, we could never win. And that's what our battle is.
You know, what you're really saying is you need to open up a common law court.
Right. And that's what we're doing. We've opened up a common law court, and we're opening up another one right now. We opened up one for the sole purpose of a depository.
Okay. I asked Dowdell if he would, because he's got a common law court open in Florida. I asked him if he would open one up in Wisconsin.
Who?
And Dowdell, Roger Dowdell.
Terry. Are you talking about Terry?
He said Roger.
Oh, Roger. Roger. I'm sorry. I meant Roger. Yeah. Well, Roger's still doing the man on the land stuff, unless he's changed.
He's into assemblies, dual assemblies at the moment.
Yeah, but you're talking about Roger Dowdell?
Yeah. He's got a common law court open in Florida because his brother,
Can you send me information on that? I'd like to go look at that.
His case, his brother's case?
Yeah, any information you can. I'd like to see his common law court.
I can send you his email. I'll send you some information.
Yeah, if you got the case number, I can go take a look at the case, maybe. On PACER, maybe.
I have to look. I have to look where it is.
Yeah, see what you could do. I don't know that Roger knows, you know, what's really going on here, or that he's open. A lot of people out there saying they open common law courts. We've opened up lots of common law courts, but the courts have never acknowledged them as being what they are, and they have changed jurisdiction. And only recently, only in the past month, have I had an epiphany. Okay, on how they've done what they've done and how it really works. And I think I got it. I think I understand it now. And understanding the crime and understanding the fraud allows you to couch your position on paper in such a way to reveal their sin. And if you can reveal their sin on paper and get it in front of enough people and enough authorities, that will put them into a point where they start to get nervous, okay? And that's the only way we're going to open up a real court of record, which would be a court let's call it natural law, okay, instead of common law. To be more precise, we'll call it natural law. And that's what we need to open up is a court of natural law as a court of record. But you have to – we're going to try to explain this in the papers that we're going to be filing here in New York when we go after the U.S. Supreme Court and the federal judiciary and others. And we're going to try to explain this and lay it out and make it clear on the paper. So anybody that wants to get involved needs to volunteer into this. We need lots of volunteers. But anyway,
you know, John, we need is an acknowledgement from Session or Trump.
Well, that's right.
And our common law court would be in. That would be the end of it right there. Boom. We could start functioning.
I heard them talking on Fox News about the fact that common law, and then they use the word natural law, is no longer being applied or acknowledged here in the United States. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I'm trying to think of the person who said this. You know, it's someone in the news, a female. I'm trying to think who it was that said this. But in any event, it's bubbling up there.
Yep. If they're talking about it on Fox, it's coming from somewhere.
It's
bubbling
up. Well, I got to believe it's coming from us, I think. But
yeah,
well, I'm all for opening up the court, and I yield.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, I'm going to get off the mic. We're 6 minutes over. If you want to spend a few more minutes, Gerard, I'm going to mute my mic.
I don't know if I could spend a few more minutes. Let's see. Let me go to the next one and see if we can get this quick. Go ahead. You're North Carolina, April. Go ahead. April going once. Going twice. Well, April's gone. What happened?
Yeah, you had Valerie in there. Valerie, go back into the queue if you want
to
speak, Valerie.
I tried to unmute her, and it shut the Q&A off.
Star 6, Valerie, if you're there and want to speak. Otherwise, she was the last caller. All right, I guess we'll get her next week, maybe.
Okay.
Close it down?
Yeah, same time, same station. Thank you, everybody, and God bless, and we're living in an exciting time, so keep your candles burnt. Yeah, amen. Have a good night.
Good night.
This is being recorded.